L-E-T-E-N-P-C.
Your night in just got legendary. Get ready to chase the rush, spin, win, and redeem instantly straight to your bank account at legendswithaz.com. With free-to-play slots, blackjack, keno, roulette, and more, experience all the thrills of Vegas without leaving your couch. Legends has it all.
Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Okay. Void where prohibited. Must be 18 plus. Play responsibly. Visit legends.com for full details.
Get in the game now and score a 50% bonus on your first purchase only at legendswithaz.com.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
He's come over to give me a cup of coffee because there's a French guy who's been told there's a Scottish guy coming in. This guy is the nephew of the head of the Marseille Mafia. This guy came in. I've never seen him bulk out. Just sheer hard work, no steroids, no nothing. This guy just trained like mad because he was like the heir to the Marseille Mafia. But he's a playboy. He's never done a day's graft in his life. You know, bodybuilding wasn't it? This guy was taller than me. It's 6'3", 6'4", like that. By the time he left, he was like that. You know, he was, and the guy high, he was a man mountain. And this big Moroccan is coming over with a packet of fags in one hand and a coffee in the other to give me. Nice. I've just smacked him. I didn't know, I couldn't see, you know. And I've just lamped him, his eye burst open that. And the guy let it go, you know. People used to look along and go like that. You see him, and he's got this big mark there. And who the hell did that to you? And you go... And they look at me, and they did. There was no explanation as they hit me a sucker punch, you know, and I wasn't looking. It was like they're going, he did that to you. Oh, Jesus. You know what I mean? It was just like, you know, but I mean, the truth is, I hit him when he wasn't looking. But they didn't know that, you know, nobody ever missed again. So if they got a tip off, they would have things like, you know, roadblocks on the motorway and things like that. So in the car with a pal, and he's seen that we're getting flagged over. Now, I was quite happy just to go through the thing because there's no reason to check us. We're two tourists, as far as they know, in a hire car. But the other guy, the driver, has just white-knuckled and he's like, you know, here we go and get that stuff out of here. So it was no longer there when we got there. And the guys, as I said, had no reason to pull us, though they've waved us on. And I think that's great, we'll still make the pub and all that. And the next thing, this lorry driver has went past. I don't speak a word of Spanish. And he's went, blah, 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 blah. And the other guy's going, oh, no. Lorry driver's just went, I've seen these guys, you know, thrown out there. So that's it. You know, the next time, police coming out everywhere. And I'm not making this up. I've got, you've seen reports at the time and all that. There was literally... Because it was a novelty, there wasn't drug scandals and that then. Everybody in this whole coast is wanting a photograph taken. They've come from everywhere and it's like Friday tea time, you know what I mean? There's Land Rovers with Guardia Civil, National Police, blue-shirted and local police, and they're all like there, you know, like, get photos with them. You know, get the photos with them. You know.
All right, we have got another epic story out of Glasgow, Alan McCarthy. Oh my goodness, it's his first time telling his story long form on a YouTube podcast, but he's had loads of media and he was in prison in Spain back when it was Franco. Some of these old prison stories before it became the modern prisons are the most brutal, as you will find out shortly. But before we get there, huge thank you for coming on, Alan.
Thanks for inviting me, Sean. It's great being here.
You're our first guest to fly down from Glasgow.
Well, you were the first podcast that I'd ever seen. Yourself and Mark Dempster were we talking about that in the way in. Mark's become a really good friend.
Hilarious podcast you do with Mark. Yeah. All of Alan's links are in the description box below this video if you want to check out his work, his music, his YouTube, his Facebook, his website, all down there. But before we get to the insanity of what happened, what was it like for you growing up?
I was born in a place called Barrhead, which is where we actually 60 years after it was born, went back there and were shooting a video with a BAFTA award winning director on the main street in my hometown. You know, it's totally surreal. A video that we recorded 30 years prior to it, live in a Spanish jail. And like, when you go and you go like, you know, this is where I am, you know, brought up and all that. There's a BAFTA award winning director filming a video that's getting shown all over the world. And it's filmed in my hometown, you know, like where we went to school. And then he's like, well, this is a bit surreal.
Which school did you go?
Went to St. Mark's in Barrhead and then St. Luke's High in Barrhead. But after that, I went over to Glasgow Caledonian Uni. But it wasn't as posh then. It was Glasgow College of Technology. And like yourself, I get involved in the Students' Union there. I was running the entertainment side of things. That was the intro into the clubbing side of things. You know, running the Students' Union dances and things like that. And basically from there, obviously we'd get more poor students were making a fiver a night on the door. And as circumstance would have it, the sort of main gay club in Glasgow, which has been going for years, is very well known. Bennett's had some sort of problems with licence, so they were doing it up. And they approached us because the Students' Union, we didn't use it on a Saturday night. So that was the introduction into sort of nightclub work, security, because a lot of the guys, they didn't want to work at gay disco. Okay. But all of a sudden, instead of getting fiver a night, we're getting like 15 or 20 a night. And then the type of people that go into these discos, and not just gay guys, it's models, the guys for clothes shops, they're all networking. Oh, like, you're quite, actually, you can speak English, you don't run about and hit people, you can talk to people, you're quite pleasant. Would you like to come and work on the door in hours? And next thing you know, like, working in all the clubs in Glasgow. The book that you did with Blink recently, he's like talking about all the clubs, you know, going there. I was working on the door when he was coming there, you know, it's like quite surreal. And we were doing fairly well because we sort of took over Sunday night in the sort of busiest club in Glasgow called the Mardi Gras at the time. That was the place. And it was busy on a Saturday, but nothing happened on a Sunday. It was dead. And we were like that, well, if we chip together, you know, hire it and see what happens. Now, those days, nobody had club nights. This is 1983, 84, something like that. Nobody's done club nights, you know. You'll hire it for a birthday party, a wedding, something like that. So we got all our friends out selling tickets, hiring it. The universe loves me some way. We didn't even look at it. Turned out it was Bank Holiday Monday the next day. We never thought of that. No, when we planned it, it was, you know, the somethingth of May gives us enough time here in April. And it couldn't happen better. Everybody's out in the work on the bank holiday. The busiest night ever. And we got to the stage where we've done it yourself, where we borrowed money off people we shouldn't really borrow money off, but that brought a bit of security because they would come down and no one would mess about us because they were in enjoying themselves, you know the type of people. And we're sitting, me and the guy that was doing it, and there's like 300 people come in and we're like, hey, that's us covered the cost, we've paid for the tickets, we've paid for this. And it was like, say, £3 to get in before 11 o'clock, and we're already in profit then, and then after it's like a fiver. And we're looting, every person walking through that door is £1.50 each. Now, we used to make a fiver a night, Stuart, and we're making £1.50 like every second. We had to shut the doors about 12 o'clock and we had a little cloakroom girl because they had a ticker thing where when somebody came in, somebody had to go out. And we're like, ah, you just get greedy, you know. It's like the amount of money we had that night. And it was back when there was still pound notes and all that. And without kidding, because it went well over capacity. The guy that was my partner, he's went down the next day and he was from the Borders and he was car mad. And it wasn't a brand new one, it was maybe a couple of years old. It was a Saab Turbo, green, racing green. He's walked in. You know, these guys in these car showrooms are used to kids coming in. Can I have a shot of that car? No. He's just opened this bag and it's full of money. And the guy's like, oh, yeah, well, great, you know, on you go. And so we did clubs, that took off, and obviously it was great. And then we decided, like, well, we can't sell to the same people because, you know, we've got all these people that come along every Sunday. And if we get too big in Glasgow, there's a few people going his noses, they're going to be out of joint as well. But we'll go to Edinburgh. And what we'll do is we'll do it on a really quiet night because we won't annoy MD because the Saturday night in that club will annoy them and we can't take it away from clubs and that. We'll do it a Monday night. How are we going to get people there? And again, we fluked it. We never planned this. We hired like a bus, which then became five buses or whatever. And it's off like, you know, the just parks at Hamilton or whatever, you know, the coaches through. Now, the first week we did it, you know, my mate went through and he was going through it to organise it and all that. And I went on the bus because I don't drive. And people after that first week, there was more fun had on the buses than there was in the club. People would actually come through for Edinburgh at 7 o'clock at night to come back on the bus to go through. As you can imagine, it was chaos. And we did that for a while, and that was a place called the Electric Circus in Edinburgh, which, you know, people will know that was the one club. And then we did the same thing to Fat Sam's in Dundee, and that was running it up there. In between times, I was working in all the clubs. I mean, look at me, I'm not the growling bouncer. But, you know, MD can come up and say that I'd love somebody to come and say, oh, I battered him or I did that, because there's no reason to. And I was like, you know, but if I said you weren't getting in, you weren't getting in, you know, because they knew that if they tried it on, who would, you know, oh, he's my mate. You're not saying that to him, you know. It didn't stop people. It was a funny one. I won't say it who was, but I think you would know. On the opening night of the Mardi Gras, this is the first luxury club. It's three floors, it's got a moving dance floor up and down and all that, and that was this, we were there the opening night, and I was working on the door and that, and I was still young, I'm only 18, 19. And obviously, young guys, you know, it's a kind of clique the doorman, you know what I mean, until you're knowing that you've got their back, they won't necessarily have your back, no, but if you, after a while, they get to know you, because there's a lot of people change jobs and that, they don't like it, so you're not putting your line on a guy that's not going to be there next week. But if you've been there and you seem all right and your face fits, so you get the you know, when it gets to 12 o'clock and it's died down or whatever, you know, everybody's wanting to be inside, it's the opening night. So I'm left at the door with the cloakroom girl and the guy that owned it, Michael Modlin. Now, I don't know the full story, but I would assume he had investors or had a problem with somebody, because someone's come up at like 1 o'clock in the morning. Now, we've been told that these doors are bulletproof glass. Why are they told, is it? Because I've never had any try to shoot me in any clubs I've worked. Nobody's come up to a shotgun at the Students' Union, put it that way, you know what I mean? And I'm like, ah, it's great. But what? It's the opening night, you know. Every place is never done properly on the opening night. It's bulletproof glass, but there's a bathroom snip holding the door shut. You know, you could go and the door would open. But these guys come up and they're going, they figured out the door's shut, all the money's getting taken, you know, it's the busiest night, the opening night, you know, the cloakroom's here, the office is there, and they're all, and the guy's like, oh, I'm just getting, and I swear to God, I'd seen shotguns and all that, I've got uncles that do shooting and fishing and I've seen films, but to have a sawn off pointing to the other side of the glass, and I'm like, and the guy said afterwards, you know, a couple of weeks later, mate, I'm saying, oh, you get nerves of steel or not? I didn't have the heart to tell him, you know, I didn't have nerves. I was frozen solid. I couldn't move. But it must have looked good. And eventually the guy's like, ah, you know, like, it's not your problem and not, nothing against you. So, you know, they could have forced the door. I've just opened this. Like, the girl, I'm going to have a word. And I said, look, guys, do yourself a favour. Come back next week. He was like, why? I says, you've not planned this out. It's the opening night. It's basically free entry. Oh no, right, and they went away and they've actually thanked me for turning
what?
Away. And of course, all the other bouncers have heard that. I've not said nothing. The bouncers have heard that, you know, for the cloakroom girl, he stood there and there was a guy's there with a shotgun on his own and turned them away. And I'm like, that, well, you're not going to say brilliant. Well, you know what I mean? And that's, you know, then you want to work there and want to work there. But it was never been harder guy or anything. It's for being. As we were saying in the car, you know, knowing who's there, who should be getting in, who shouldn't, telling people, you know, like, look, it's a private party tonight. You know, giving them a bit of dignity. You know, you're not saying you're not getting in because you're scruffy. You know what I mean? it's resident, you know, private party. But come back again next week because the guy's there with his girlfriend. And if you leave him with no recourse, he's going to fight you to prove face. But you say, oh, like, Sean, sorry, mate, you can't come in this week. Did you not know that it's private party? You know, nobody's getting in. Sorry about that. You can walk away. And I've made your night because that girl, oh, you know his name and all, oh, he's your best pal and all that. You know, pity we didn't come up when it was a wedding or whatever, you know what I mean? And that's what it's all about. You know, there's too many people go on and start working in the doors or the prison service because they get bullied at school. They're little Hitlers or whatever. And they come out and they love to put it about and they just cause more grief for everybody else.
Yeah.
You just treat people, you know, the way like you would like to be treated yourselves, you know. At the end of it, I should have let the guy shoot the owner because about a year later, we are coining money in, we're making fortunes. And we get this guy that we know, he's come up and said, like, by the way, you know, I work in a certain office and you're going to get an investigate. What? An investigation?
I hope you're enjoying the podcast. Here's a word from my sponsor, Skylight.
How easy is it to use?
Well, look, he's using it now.
Whether you're tech savvy or not, if a one-year-old can use it.
Who's that?
It's beloved by millions. Millions of families have fallen in love with the Skylight frames.
Is that mummy?
Sold across 34 countries with 675 million photos and videos shared. Wow.
And all you've got to do is download an app, the Skylight app, and you can upload all of your favourite photos to it. So as you can see, I've uploaded about 100 so far.
This holiday season, give the gift that keeps on giving memories, whether it's for grandparents who adore seeing the grandkids' latest antics or a friend who loves capturing every moment. The Skylight Frame is the perfect gift to bring joy and connection into any home. It's easy to use, effortless setup and instant sharing with no app or subscription required. And a quick one-minute setup, Skylight is designed to be easy for all ages. Simply plug in the frame and you're ready to start sharing memories. As you can see, it's got an intuitive touchscreen display, interactive and engaging. The 10-inch color touchscreen allows for easy interaction, letting you pinch, crop and zoom photos directly on the frame, creating a personalized experience. Gift mode, the ultimate surprise. Preload your favorite photos before gifting the Skylight frame. When your loved one plugs in their new frame, they'll be welcomed with special memories ready for immediate enjoyment. It's better than social media. Skylight frame is a great private way to share photos without posting them to the world or having to print hard copies. Store thousands of photos. Skylight frame can hold up to 8,000 photos with 8 gigabytes of space. Satisfaction guaranteed. We're confident that you'll love Skylight. They offer free 120-day returns. For a limited time, get up £40 off your purchase of a Skylight frame when you go to uk.skylightframe.com/Sean, S-H-A-U-N. That's right. To get up to £40 off your Skylight frame, just go to uk.skylightframe.com/Sean. That's uk.skylightframe.com/Sean. Get up to £40 off a Skylight frame at uk.skylightframe.com. Sean. Link in the description box if you're watching this on YouTube. Cheers. Thanks for supporting our sponsor. Back to the podcast.
You know, I might be 20 at the time. Inland revenue. And it wasn't inland revenue, it's the worst. It's the customs and excise. God, you can die and they'll still screw you. And this was the VAT man was after you. And I'm like, how can the VAT man be after me? I'm not even VAT registered. That might be something to do with it. It's a bit like, it's cash in hand. But what had happened was the owner of the place has got... The club's been open for a year now, or the first stock take. Now, customs advisors are not idiots. If you're a taxi driver and you say you only earn a tenner a week, they will know every other taxi driver earns 100 quid. So they know certain nights in certain clubs how much alcohol is consumed. They also know that if you say you're not taking door money because it's a birthday party on a Wednesday night, they will see... There's 100 people there because there's £100 worth of drinks doing. However, if you say that Sunday night every time is a private function and you are outselling every other night at the club, that must be some birthday party. That guy must be the most popular guy in Glasgow. Is he having a birthday 52 weeks a year? Do you know what I mean? So we got told that he didn't go out his way to grass up. He told us, you know, it was club nights. And when they knew it was club nights, they knew there was entrance money and they wanted to know where it was going. And to this day, I don't know what happened to it. I'm not going to say they were after us for that. But we get told, and I don't know even what happened to the other guys that were doing it, as we have never seen them again since. But it seemed a very good idea. I was like 21, just turned 21, to maybe go and have a wee holiday somewhere. And I had friends down in London, and I went down to, was one of them was at Chelsea Art College, and I was down there, you know, like, and it's all Rupert and Henry and all that. And these guys, like, talk like they run the planet. They've not got 2 cents to their name. And I'm like, you know, because I've come down and it's another Scottish girl that I was with and her pals, we've put it on a bit, you know who he is. And they're like, you know, daddy's got this and that, and we're going to the country pile. Off. I've opened this bag. All right, we'll just go out then. And it is literally just full of cat. And these guys are like, because that's, you know, all the door money and that. And we went and just, like, stayed there for a couple of days, did all the, at that point, the tramps and stuff like that and all that, the clubs. Don't think Stringfellows was open then. Might have been, but it was all because they were at Chelsea Art College and it was all they get into all them clubs. And then decided I'm going to go somewhere. And it was went in, and they called them bucket shops in those days. I think it was Oxford Street or something like that. Just these seedy little things. No internet and going on, getting cheap flights. You went in, and it's, where do you want to go? No idea. You want to go to the States? We'll get flights to, oh no, 18 hours, 12 hours, whatever. No, no going there. Islands, oh no. And okay, well. And it's like, oh, we get loads of flights to Malaga. Now, I'd been to Benidorm, I'd been to Lorette with my mum and dad and stuff like that as a kid, you know, and they went, Malaga. Now, all the guys going round the clubs then, it's the Costa del Crime, all the club owners and all the yuppies are, oh, I was at Daddy's Villa, I'm just back from Portobinus and Marbella. And then the women said, Malaga. Oh, aye, that's next to Marbella. And I'm like, oh, yeah, we'll go there. And I've arrived there, and I can make up this wonderful story about how wonderful it was when I arrived. I got there, I booked in to 5-star hotel, Malaga Palacio, on my own, and it's got the roof terrace. Now, I thought it's been really posh. I'm ordering Cuba Libres because I've seen it as the cocktails, and I'll look the part, you know. Cuba Libres are Bacardi and Coke, you know what I mean? It's like cocktails, Bacardi and Coke cocktail, and it's like rooftop swimming pool. So I've got up there, and it's waiter service to come round. Now, I've just lain there all day, and you know, I'd met this couple from Glasgow, and they were going to go sightseeing and all that the next day. And they've come round, you know, and they've not got any answer at the door. You know, I'm still probably there at 9 o'clock at night. You know, I'm okay now. My tanning's very good. But this was the first time I've had the serious colour. They've got the manager, because they started to get worried, they've not appeared, and that manager, and he's opened the door, they've come in. You all right? No, I'm zonked, you know. Eventually got me to wake up, and this is the guy's wife who was telling me, when I got up off the bed, my skin was still on the bed. You know what I mean? That bad sunburn, you know, it was just like stuck. I'd been there for like 12 hours solid, no move, pissed. And to this day, I've never had sunburn again. I can go out in the sun, I will go bright red day one. But after that, you know, that's it. So that was my introduction to Spain. So cash there and just living it about, you know, and it's like just going to bars all day and all that, you know. And so I gradually moved down the coast. I went down to Torremolinos because that was where all the young people went down a couple of times to Marbella. And I mean, these guys are on their 50s, not running about in Ferraris and all that. And I'm like, no, Torremolinos, 18 to 30s, you know, been there, mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And it was all right in the summer, just going to the bars and all that. And then I'd said this before, it's so long ago, I'm not get done for it, but somebody said, you know, like, you know, I had a gold Amex and all that. I wasn't even 21 under the gold Amex. That's when gold Amexes were actually, you know, were worth something, you know. Anyway, it's like, well, you can use that. And well, I've got a Visa card as well, right? Just report it stolen and then we'll just go out and... Now, there wasn't credit card fraud in those days. There wasn't anything. You got a little book and you had the clunk click thing. You remember that? So unless you were an absolute idiot and went out and bought a lawnmower when you're supposed to be on holiday, they're not going to check if you're buying aftershave and T-shirts and, you know, whatever. And they just go, you know, you come up and say, oh, I fancy a new thing with T-shirt and go away. Take 5 minutes' work, a few hundred pounds. I can't get caught because it won't be there. It's my signature. And that was just a wee hobby in between, you know, taking the sun and not. And that was like, and it wasn't coming on top. And somebody up there likes me. One of the girls in the bar says, oh, I heard you. I'd got her perfume or something like that. And because she worked in the bar, we just gave her it for the, you know, the price. My boyfriend works in the post office. And I'm like, and? He does the thing, mate, and he knows which ones are the cards. Mm. I'm like, well, you don't have to tell me twice. Now I'm getting the picture. I says, aye. And she says, aye, you bring them over. What do you reckon they're worth? She says, well, you've got, oh, I'll give him a couple of £100, and that's 1980, easy. And he went, aye, that pay for his holiday, and he's no greedy. And like, so you get these cards that you can use without a chance of being caught. It's okay, it's not your name. As long as you remember you're John Smith, it will be your signature. And that's the only thing they're going by, because they just check the book and it takes 6 months to update it. So that's like crazy stuff. I was going in one of the bars and all that, and I got a friend with one of the guys, and his mum and dad had come over from Scotland, and I think it was a restaurant, a chip shop, to retire. Now, it was great in the little town. They were the most popular because they did good chips. Everybody went there. They've opened a bar in Torremolinos, and they're in their 60s. You know, are you going to go there when you're 18-year-old? Do you know what I mean? It just went. So we took it over, and my mate's bar was running the beach parties for Club 18 to 30s, which every Thursday night, this is before video cameras and mobile phones. That was carnage, you know. You think you've seen life. This is just, and it's Torremolinos, you know. This is like the maddest stories you'll ever hear. And if we didn't do it, because they're on holiday for a fortnight, 18 to 30s, we had 20 holidays the alternate Thursday. And we knew a few of the guys would come up off season that I knew for the clubs and that in Glasgow, and started mixing because that was all the famous people that were down there at the time. And the guy that used to do the beach parties, the guy Noel McGuinness, he was our live music. And we used to go down to Fungrow, and it was a place called the Dalesman, and that was the place. You know, if you went in there and you weren't known, you'd get if you were in a good mood, you would be asked politely to leave. You might not even be asked. And I remember, I mean, Noel used to go down there. He was the live entertainment on Sunday afternoon, and everybody was down there. It was, you name it, you've probably half the books on your shelves, you know, or you've interviewed them. They'll tell you. And I remember one, now, I was naive. I can tell the joke now because I understand it now, but I didn't understand it then. We didn't have X movies and things like that, and you weren't, you know, it wasn't as in your face, and people talking about, you didn't know what they're talking about, but you laugh at the jokes. And I remember being in, now, people just drive cars over because you couldn't check the car was stolen. There's no, so somebody, I'm at Ferrari, I'll steal one in Manchester and drive it over to Spain, give you the keys, that's it. They don't know it's not your car. You know what I mean? Spain's got no extradition. So all these guys, they change cars with the day of the week. And of course, one day the coppers have come in, and I get the joke now, and everybody's like, that's party. All these keys were get just thrown in the middle of the floor, and I'm laughing. I don't know what they're talking about until then. I did know what they were talking about. It's just like all these keys in the cars, and this whole square is just Ferrari, you know, Countach, you know, whatever. And they're just like, take them, you know, on you go. And obviously, a lot of these guys sort of knew me from Glasgow, being the wee guy, you know. It used to be funny, you'd get one of the head guys coming in, he's 5 foot nothing, but he's like serious guy, and come in, call me wee man, and I'm 6 foot. But it's just the glass, you know, calling you wee man, you know. Nah, it's all right, it's just me. And you get the guys coming down, because if they want to go out for night, enjoy themselves, and they go to Marbella, they're getting all these, it's starting to get a bit, you get people coming over wanting to make a name for themselves, and you can't let your guard down. So they come up and go like, hey, can you just shut the doors? And we just shut the doors. And I remember the guy that was running, he said, don't worry, we'll get sorted. Do you know what I mean? Just free bar. And we get a couple of the girls in, you know, that worked in the bars giving out the tickets. Not that they want to pull, they're all married men, they're not interested. But it brought the tension down. You know, there's a, it's like having young Ziggy in, you know, you mind your language and, you know what I mean? It just diffuses it. So they bring them in, the girls are getting free cocktails, and somebody, you know, giving them drinks, and, you know, and giving them a couple of quid, and At the end of the night, my mate's like, are you sure? These guys can drink like nobody's business. Next time, the guys are just tipped in. There's a couple of grand. Now, that's more than that bar took in a month. You know what I mean? And you don't, what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. And like we were saying, Sean, the guy's like, you know, I need to get a car, but I've not got a driving license. I've not got a driving license I want to use. Do you know a car had a place that'll do it? Now, if you don't live here or you don't live there, but if you've been living there a few hundred years, you might say, I've got this motor sitting there. I don't have an idea. I can't sell it. Oh, I've got somebody who wants to rent a car for a fortnight. And they'll give you, you know, a couple of £100 for it. Oh, great. And somebody says, like, oh, I've got a mate. He's lost his passport. He's got nowhere to stay. Can't check in a hotel. Oh, right. Our holiday flat, we've been let down. My neighbours were coming over last week, but they can't make it. Can use ours. Great. That gradually becomes bigger and bigger and bigger. And then one day I was on the road going up from the Costa del Sol to Barcelona way. And these friendly Spanish cops decided to pull us over because at this point in time, there's all the things, you know, and a lot of things transpired. And allegedly, there was like all this green stuff in the car, but it wasn't actually there when they pulled us because it had miraculously flown away. But that's, even the judge said that. The cops said it was, wasn't theirs. We said it wasn't ours, but it was there. So it was somebody's. And as a result of that, at the age, I don't think I turned 25, I think it was 24. I've suddenly been hit with a 6.5 year sentence for narco-trafficking. Not happy with that. They've added on a $65 million fine.
Slow down. Right. Take us through the day of your arrest.
The day of the arrest, we're going up to see some people up the coast, and in the car, it's a hired car. And I was sitting there, and like, there's no, people don't know about drugs in Spain, they're not interested in that. There wasn't all this scandal like and stopping things. However, there was a lot of in Spain. ETA, the Spanish sort of Basque nationalist separatist people, were going about and they were pretty heavy duty and things like that. So if they got a tip off, they would have things like, you know, roadblocks on the motorway and things like that. So in the car with a pal, and he's seen that we're getting flagged over. Now, I was quite happy just to go through the thing because there's no reason to check us. We're two tourists, as far as they know, in a hired car. But the other guy, the driver, has just white-knuckled and he's like, you know, here we go and get that stuff out of here. So it was no longer there when we got there. And the guys, as I said, had no reason to pull us, so they've waved us on. And I think, that's great, we'll still make the pub and all that. And the next thing, this lorry driver has went past. I don't speak a word of Spanish. And he's went, blah, 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 blah. And the other guy's going, oh, no. Lorry driver's just went, I've seen these guys, you know, thrown out there. So that's it. You know, the next time, police coming out everywhere. And I'm not making this up. I've got, you've seen reports at the time and all that. There it was literally, because it was a novelty, there wasn't drug scandals in that then. Everybody in this whole coast is wanting a photograph taken. They've come from everywhere and it's like Friday tea time, you know what I mean? There's Land Rovers with Guardia Civil, National Police, blue-shirted and local police, and they're all like there, you know, like, get photos with them. You know, get the photos with them. You know. Now, what none of them have thought to do is ask where the lorry drivers went. So that lorry driver has disappeared, who's the only person that's ever seen what's happened. They never got him. So one of the cops, when it got to the trial stage, actually said he'd seen it and was like, no, he didn't know. But at that point, sort of life took a little, you know. I remember seeing this old Spanish woman go by in a old beat-up car and she's crossed herself and I went, oh my God, now it's getting serious, right? Because, like, I'm just going, no, this is like in the movies, it's not really happening, it's not. And the other guy, he's like a few years older, I mean, should know better. And he's like, he used to call his Iceman because any trouble in the bar, because you're used to working on doors, you know, people can call you names and you don't, if you got worried about every single thing, and Top Gun was out at the time, he used to call his Iceman because I used to be nervous. But if something happened, then suddenly become calm. So it's cropped something a bit. And he's like, oh, mummy, daddy. I'm like, oh, right, I know, okay. And of course, they took that to, like, I must be doing this all the time. You know what I mean? It's like, you know, all right. And we got parted. And I thought he was getting the same as me, because I've suddenly found myself, we've narrowed it down to two possible police stations, both of which were built in about the 1500s. We are talking, like, it's a cobbled street outside at ground level. There's no sun coming down. It's like a narrow street. I am subterranean. I'm looking up about 20, 30 foot up to floor level, and that's where the bars are. It's cobbles. Now, it's cobbles, which would be all right because they're quite smooth. These cobbles have been during the Spanish Civil War or something like that. So it's cobbles, grime, dirt, you know, you name it. There's powder. Every time somebody opens the door, it's powder. I have got like a horsehair blanket, you know. Like, you being the author, somebody said, you should write an open charter. And I was going, like, in the morning, I was in this five-star villa, silk sheets. The next morning, I wake up and I've got a horsehair blanket on a cobble thing.
Legends, the greatest social casino experience, has arrived at Legends.com. With thousands of the best free-to-play casino-style games, chances to earn millions of bonus coins and win real money. Legends is revolutionizing the Vegas experience wherever you are. If you love winning, then you'll love playing at Legends.com. Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Visit Legends.com for more information. Legends with a Z.com is legendary fun.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Know what that means? Ooh, I've been hearing that a lot lately. That's what I hear when we make another sale on Shopify, the all-in-one commerce platform to start, run, and grow your business. Shopify is the commerce platform revolutionizing millions of businesses worldwide. Whether you're selling Pokemon cards or hoodies, Shopify simplifies selling online and in person so you can successfully grow your business. Covering all your sales channels, from a shopfront-ready POS system to its all-in-one e-commerce platform, Shopify even gets you selling across social media marketplaces like Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok. Full of the industry-leading tools ready to ignite your growth, Shopify gives you complete control over your business and your brand without learning new skills in design or coding. And thanks to award-winning help and with an extensive business course library, Shopify is ready to support your success every step of the way. What's lovely about Shopify is that no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify will be there to empower you with the confidence and control to take your business to the next level. It's time to get serious about selling and get Shopify today. This is Possibility, powered by Shopify. Sign up for a £1 per month trial period at shopify.co.uk/Sean, S-H-A-U-N, all lowercase. Go to shopify.co.uk/Sean to take your business to the next level today. Shopify.co.uk/Sean. Link in description box if you're watching this on YouTube. Thanks for supporting our sponsor. Back to the podcast. Cheers.
There's a guy actually pissing in a dog bowl and giving me that and expecting me to drink that as water. And that's in between that, I've been getting slapped senseless. And I'm thinking, oh, well, he'll be getting it as bad. I didn't know the other guy got taken straight to the prison because he was a resident. His fiance was a Spanish lawyer. And they figured out I was young and they put a bit of pressure on, you know, something will happen. Plus, I kept telling him to go and depart from my presence in quite colourful language. And it was the only thing they understood. So I was making the things worse for myself because, you know, every time I'm doing something, I'm like, F off, you know, get away, you know. So slap again, you know, and I don't know how long I was there because there was no way of telling, you know, it was just constantly dark. And a year ago, I met up with all the original sort of guards that were there and social workers and that, and they tried to do it, to piece it together when we actually got, because they got newspaper reports at the time. They've got when the other guy roughly got moved from one place to another, and they reckon he was there for 18 days. Now, that is quite a lengthy time, and that was dog food and dog rice and crap like that. And I kept getting reminded. I never saw a counsellor in like that, or the ambassadors or that. I never saw them until I got to the real prison. And I'm getting told by all the guards in pidgin English what is going to happen to me when I go to the real prison. You know, I'm going to get sorted, and, you know, I'll not be able to sit down for a week and all that. So this is going like, you know, you get no diversion. This is in your head. No way is that happening to me. Now, because that's on my head, I've been very lucky in a few times. I told you about one when I went to Madrid, and this is the other one. Somebody must like me, because what happened is just, I'm coming out and all the prisoners get thrown out onto a patio, and within 10 seconds, your next 5-10 years is decided, because how you react deems your status. You know what I mean? If you give somebody your last cigarette, you're going to be given your last cigarette and a lot worse for the rest of your life. If you stand up, you know, like what you were saying, when you get in the different places, when you're meeting the Aryan guys and that, there's a way of acting, you know, and subconsciously, we're working on the doors. It's been, you know, the body language has been there. Plus, I was reminded of it that when I came out of there, I told you that I had been there for 18 days, so I've got this bit. Now it goes grey. It was red, and it's 18 days out here. I've not seen daylight, so I look like a lunatic, right? There's the biggest guy in the jail who became really good mates with a guy. Hi, he's Moroccan, but proper Moroccan, you know, proper family. He's like, he's come over to give me a cup of coffee because there's a French guy who's been told there's a Scottish guy coming in. This guy is the nephew of the head of the Marseille Mafia. And this big Moroccan is coming over with a packet of fags in one hand and a coffee in the other to give me.
Nice.
I've just smacked him. I didn't know, I couldn't see, you know, and I've just lamped him and his eye burst open that, and the guy let it go, you know. That's what I mean, I could have been, but it used to be funny years later, when you see it, like, we're sitting, you know, on the sort of steps, we're up the top step, and you see us, we're running the place, and it's like, Joel, this guy came in, I've never seen him bulk out, just sheer hard work, no steroids, no nothing, this guy just trained like mad, because he was like the heir to the Marseille Mafia. But he's a playboy. He's never done a day's graft in his life, you know. Bodybuilding wasn't it? This guy was taller than me, about 6'3", 6'4", like that. By the time he left, he was like that, you know. He was, and the guy high, he was a man mountain. And people used to look along and go like that. You see him, and he's got this big mark there, and who the hell did that to you? And he'd go, and they look at me, and they did. There was no explanation as they hit me a sucker punch, you know, and I wasn't looking. It was like they're going, he did that to you. Oh, Jesus. You know what I mean? It was just like, you know, but I mean, the truth is, I hit him when he wasn't looking. But they didn't know that, you know, nobody ever missed again. And so they hung there, and that was just like crazy things at the start, you know. I mean, it's like, sent you, you know, I'm not boasting about this because it's absolute stupidity, you know, the trouble I caused myself before I get involved in the music. Because in Spain, we were discussing this earlier about the time you get off for time served. Now, you have to do one simple thing a month. There's like 40 guys in the gallery, and once a month, you have to spend 10 minutes mopping the floor. No me. I'm like, it's bad enough you've got me here. I'm not effing you mopping your effing floor. One, I don't get any redemption, so I do basically my whole sentence. I don't tell them that in a nice, friendly way because I'm frustrated and I don't speak any Spanish and I think, you know, I shouldn't be here in the first place. I've got a chip in my shoulder, so I tell them to go away and play with themselves. So they don't quite like that. And when everybody else has gone, they explain to me why they don't like it. So I'm going downstairs. Instead, they're just mopping the floor and I'm going to get time off my sentence. I've got it. But it's not making me a big guy because nobody else sees this. You know what I mean? Nobody else on. You know, it's not like you're getting status or anything like that. And this would go on. We were talking about the booze and stuff like that. I mean, everybody in Spain, then I'd never seen in my life. You know, Glasgow people get drunk. You know, there was no I left in the 80s.
So we're going to say brown and white.
Oh, yeah, the brown stuff, good? Sorry.
Yeah, okay.
The brown stuff. There was none of that in Glasgow. People just had a drink at the weekends. You know, probably caused just as much carnage. But in Spain, in those prisons, that was just their lifestyle, you know, their way of coping. And it was, for somebody that had never seen it, and I think I'm quite a nice person. I've got a good heart. But you just learn to switch off. Because I remember there was one French guy, he was French-Swiss, and I'm walking around the party with him. That's another thing. In Spain, it's like the punishment is being outside, not inside. You know, you spend like 20 hours a day outside. It's a privilege to get back in. You know, everybody else in the world, you know, you get mixing as like a privilege. You're out there for 8 o'clock in the morning, you go back up for siesta, then you're back out to 9 o'clock at night. You know, and that's in the hot sun, that's in the winter, you know what I mean? That's it. And the first few days when I started watching people, all they do is they're walking up and down, and I'm going, I've went to the asylum. But then you realise you might as well do that, or you're going to get piles sitting on stone cold floors. You're getting a bit of exercise, and other, nobody can listen to you. And it's like, and we used to laugh because Joel, he started to get known because he's like sorted a few people, the French guy. And we used to walk crossways. Everybody walks that way. So we walk that way. And nobody ever, everybody would stop. You know what I mean? And because it's shorter, they had to stop like about, you know, 3 or 4 times every time you're passing. And it was like just, it was unsaid that nobody would do anything. And like we were talking about the alcohol and stuff like that, get caught, and there was no hiding at the cells, like about 6 foot by 4 foot or something like that. And got these bottles of water, you know, made up with wine and all that. It's, you couldn't drink enough to get drunk, you know, till later when we discovered what to do it. And they've caught me. And I was just laughing, it's a Scotsman. And they knew I didn't take any drugs, and the guys just went like that. So there are some decent folk, you know. But what the upshot of that was, sat there for 6 months, you know, I'm not interested in drugs, I just want to get a good night out, you know, and cannot get away. We tried bribing the guys in the kitchen and all that, not to boil it. No, it's too obvious. And then it's came to me, you know, I've done chemistry, you know, we just freeze it. You can't boil it. You're not boiling the alcohol off, you just freeze the water. And there's plenty of freezers in the place. You know, these guys think we're walking about this pure alcohol then. The crazy thing was, we tried it the first night and we had to dilute it about 10 times before we didn't go blind. We spent months trying to work it out to get it high alcohol, then we've had to dilute it again because it's too strong. And it's like, oh, crazy. So we're doing well, you know, like nobody messes with us. And, you know, Joel was very well. I was indigente, which means penniless when I came in. I'd never get a penny coming in. But, you know, the cigarettes and the tins were coming from somewhere because, like, you know, we give people money and, of course, they gave it back and all that, you know what I mean? But the gypsies and that, they, because there was millions of them, they dealt with the drugs. And we didn't need to do that because we didn't need the hassle. If people would lose money, we ended up, like, do you remember radio rentals with the TVs and that? People used to call us radio rentals because people didn't pay to take their telly. Now, that was a big thing because it's not like nowadays. To get a telly, there was probably about 4 tellies in the whole prison because you had to write this thing called an instancia for anything you wanted. It was so humiliating. You have to go, Your Honourable Worshipfulness Director, could your humble slave please be allowed to order a pair of trainers because they've got no shoes left or whatever. And you have to write it. And it's got to be that formal language. And you've got to do that for the telly and that. And, like, with the telly, you've got to, it's got to be a certain size. It's tiny and all that. And you've got to do this and you've got to wait so many weeks. So tellies were like mobile phones or something nowadays. So if you had a telly, you didn't keep it for long, put it that way. You might get to watch it one night. And then people would owe it and then we'd rent it out. You know, the rest of the people, they'd have to get another one, go through them. So we'd make money. And there was a few people like we didn't get on with, but you didn't bother us, we didn't bother you. But there was a few of the gypsies that were bullying and things like that, and I didn't like seeing them doing, you know, pick on folk. And I just like, you know, tell them to go and take a run. But if they were on their own, they would accept that. But then if there was two or three of them in the same place, they'd get a bit leery. And if you were on your own, you're like that. And one of the times, I didn't even think any of it. I've just told this guy, you know, beat it. He's trying to walk in front of me at the coffee queue. It's just a hole in the wall. You get a cup. If that cup had seen one granular coffee last year, it just kept getting diluted again, you know what I mean? But it's something to do. It passes the day, you go and have your coffee. And this guy has come up and tried to cut in. I told him, away, on you go. Nothing thought about. Days later, I'm standing there. And I thought I was punched. And coffee queue's there, and the guys, next thing, the guys have come running over and round. And I'm totally oblivious. This is like coffee to take up to for siesta. And I'm like, nah, right. What is that? Oh, no. Jesus Christ. Now, this is very early days. I spoke a few words and I didn't know what they were saying. And they're telling me to go to the doctors. Now, you go to the doctors, you're going to have to explain what's happened. And I didn't know what's happened, but I knew it wasn't. What had actually happened is they put what they call a pincho, which is like prison shiv, but it's like a kebab skewer, right? Now, that's bad enough. Again, somebody up there likes me. I never hit anything. But what they do to make sure it's not a pleasant experience is there's loads of rats and all that. They dip that for a couple of days in rat shit and human shit. So it's festering. And how quickly this affects you, I went up at like 2 o'clock, and by the time that the cells got opened again at 5 to go down for the dinner, the guy that was in the cell with me is battering on the doors because I'm like hallucinating, I'm doing fever and all that, and they've taken me. I actually got in trouble with the guards. Now, one of them speaks Spanish, but for not telling them who did it. Now, I was there for days, you know, antibiotics and that, and chained to the bed. I'm not going anywhere, you know what I mean? And they put me on a charge for not telling them who did it. But unbeknown to me, now, I can safely say I was hallucinating. I had no idea what was going on, you know, so I'm not culpable in any which way. But the French lad, he's been out, and the gypsy guys know that you don't do that, your mate, you know, it's coming on top. Turns out this guy is the nephew of the King of the Gypsies, who runs the whole drug thing. His son's died of AIDS, another one's been shot, another one's been, you know, I mean, committed suicide, and his nephew's the only one that's left, so that's the only, and it's a big thing to continue the family name. So this guy, the old guy's like, oh, I don't mind if you batter him, you can do, break his legs, do whatever, chop his arm off, but please don't kill him and all that. You can have whatever you want. Look, take all the heroin and all that. Joel's like, I don't mind, that's too much grief, no get it all you. But he did take over all the nothing to do with me, I'm lying on a hospital bed. But that became extremely lucrative for them, you know what I mean? And that's just one of the daft things, you know what I mean? And round about that point, I will no go to anything, do nothing. I'm just like non-conformist, you know. I didn't go looking for problems, but I had like sanctions and everything. I'd been in there a couple of years. I had not one day off my sentence. I'd actually days added to it. But I was stupid and I wasn't realising what I was doing. I just thought I was doing all right. And I wouldn't even go along to learn Spanish classes because that's like conforming, you know. I'm not a grass, but going along to learn Spanish has been a grass, but it was just, I'm not doing what they tell me. And Spain was going through, you were talking about Franco, through this sort of democracy process while I was in jail, and they suddenly become, they wanted to rehabilitate prisoners, and they got new directors, and they brought in social workers and that. Before they had torturers, you know, then they brought in social workers and psychiatrists. You know what I mean? And they were trying. You know, there was all these young people coming in. So You've got all these people like teachers, social workers, psychologists, you know, people who come from university that are intelligent on one side, and you've got this old guard that are in their 50s and 60s that have worked there when Franco was in power and you could take people out. There was firing squads in these prisons, you know what I mean? So they're used to that. They don't think, you know, anything about that. And they see people there, and so they're fighting all over each other, and they don't get on. And at that point, something happened that changed my life. They started, like, one of the workshops, the workshops for making carvings and workshops for painting. Somebody was like, a workshop for guitar. And like, I thought, I'll have a crack at that, you know what I mean? And it so happens, the guy Wang Ho Gotl is, yeah, you can see him on the website, and that was a very famous Spanish guitar player who had a music college and an English language college side by side. So he was in there, really nice guy, doing his bit for their charity and, you know, thingies. And he said he's playing guitar. Now, prior to that, I wasn't in the first couple of classes. They've got these little Spanish guitars, and these gypsies are coming in, and it's like the chimp's tea party. They're batter, batter, like, you know, it's chaos, cacophony, and they're trying to steal the guitars and whatever, you know, and there's no string left or nothing by the end of the day, and they're all fighting over each other. And, so they were going to stop it, and somebody said that, oh, he can play guitar. And the guy's like, aye, you know, like, play some. I mean, it was obviously a couple of years since I've touched one. I was like, that's all right. Somebody said, there's another guy in the kitchen who can play. So week, fortnight later, they've got hold of two proper acoustic guitars in private and got me and the guy for the kitchen. So I'm like, if you play guitar, you can have a wee jam session with somebody. And I can't remember, 12 Bar Blues, House of the Rising, something. But, you know, it's like, oh, that's all right, you know, okay. Now, the guy in the kitchen, he's going, I'm not going to go and play guitar. I'm getting a day for a day off my sentence. You know, you're not going to get that playing guitar. And it was like, aye, all right. You know, and he wasn't keen on it. But in between times, there's been sort of like, it would be the equivalent of the X Factor. You know, it was, except you had to sing and play. It wasn't miming. They've announced this, all the local radio stations, you go into regional heat, national heat, da-da-da-da-da-da. So the music guy's going, why don't you and Adrian, you know, get a band? You know, because it's got to be a band that can't be, and you've got to be able to play live and all that. And like, aye. He says, no, but we'll pull some strings because the council's supporting it and they might give us guitars and all that. And, aye, you get guitars, we'll play, you know what I mean? Aye. And lo and behold, they did. They must have pulled something because they got a couple of electric guitars, drums, bass and all that. And the next thing we know, obviously, the other guy's working, so he kind of came through. But we know the songs that we're going to do, and it's only going into the women's module to play. You know, for the, they have a sort of charity day where all the women can bring their families in, the grandparents, and it's a cool atmosphere, and it's like you just play there. Only 15 minutes. Can you manage three songs? Oh, aye. You know, on the Saturday before it, they were buying stuff in dribs and drabs, you know. We'd have a speaker off a hi-fi system. We'd have another speaker that they used in the gym for announcements. We'd have the PA from, you know, the awards ceremony for the guards. You know, it was just nothing matched, right? And then we've got a set of drums. Oh, great. Drummer. Now, my French mate, he said his guy played drums because he's told me he played drums. Oh, great. That's brilliant. No, a drummer can play anything. You know, they don't need the melody. They just need to know the rhythm and they can do it. And it's his mate, so the more the merrier. You know, we could get as many people out as possible. So we got him along. Well, he didn't know the guy's never played drums in his life. He just wanted to go along and see the women. So we've arrived there. And what we didn't know as well, it was meant to be just the women. And we're watching all these people going about with cameras and all that. And what's going on here? And said, oh, it's filmed for Chickalandia. It means nothing to me. We only discovered later on Chickalandia is like Ant and Dec or CITV or whatever you call it for daytime on a Sunday, but they were filming. So it ends up that the rhythm guitarist is playing guitar. We've only got three songs. We decided on Europa by Santana because it was instrumental and neither of us had to sing. And we did Twist and Shout and La Bamba because that would be kiddie style. Both are the same song. You just change the words. So one's in Spanish, so we shared the load, and they insisted for the competition thing we had to do one song we'd written ourselves, so I'd written a song, you know, and so I obviously had to sing that. What we didn't know, that programme, the Ant and Dec thing, was national TV on a Sunday morning. So our first three songs, you've seen the itinerary, has went out on like Spanish daytime thing. Now, immediately the subtitles come up, Jailhouse Rock, Bad Boys of Rock, you know what I mean? Very easy headline. And the following week, I think it was, I showed you, they asked us to do two songs, so I had to write another song, and we were out. As far as we can get inside the prison, it was at the open prison, but still inside the gates, because three radio stations wanted to come in with the outside broadcast units, but we couldn't go out. So that was the compromise, that they could bring their vans in, you know, through the security things. But we were, besides, everybody's looking at us, we're not exactly going to run away. And our second concert was playing two songs live on three different radio stations on stage. We saw guards and, you know, the workers and psychologists and all there and that. And I showed you, it was 15 days later, because the two were on a Sunday, and it was Monday or whatever it was. But 15 days after that, we are playing three songs live on the Top 40 show on Radio Spain.
Wow.
Now, we don't have a single out. Why have they got us on? You know, it's like Top of the Pops. Here we have number 29, the Rolling Stones. Here we have ABBA. Now we've got three songs by Berlin, 90. You know what I mean? And it's just surreal. You know, like, we're there and that's just happening. And radio stations are on, there's people coming in, and we're in all the papers. One of the guys I was telling you about is part of the journey as well, a guy, Angel Serpena. This guy was like a young local DJ. He's in his teens, early 20s, and he's like the DJ for not even Radio Bristol. It might be Radio Bristol's hospital radio. And he's covering our story. And what would happen is he'd do a report, maybe like Radio London to pick up it and Radio Manchester. And he's gradually went up, and he was always following every one of our concerts and was writing about us and everything. And he put us in for the competitions. He was playing all our early songs, which got us noticed. So he's been right from the start. And the thing was, it's getting played on the radio and the prisons are loving this. You know, it's great, you know. Amnesty International's just produced the Helsinki report, which has put Spain as the worst prisons in Europe. The ones we're in, you know, the torture, the degradation, you know, dying, people getting, you know, the brutality. And they've got us out playing. And that's great, you know, but they've not realised there is not, they put us in for a competition that we just had to send a demo into. And the prize is a recording session. We've only gone and won it. Now, that has really messed up a lot of people's things. This is now in Madrid. You know, there's ministers deciding on, you know, who can go out and, you know, like, but. And the thing was, they'd let us out a couple of times. We played at the director's wife's birthday party. They sneaked us out because the other four guys were in the open prison. I was the only one holding them back, you know, because I hadn't been condemned. So they could go out, they could wangle or fix it so their home visits coincided with it. But there's no hiding that, you know, I wasn't supposed to be there. And then we've got this thing and it's like, they came to us, they thought was a solution. And it's on the videos, or the songs on the thing. What they did was went, right, well, they've won the competition, they can't go out. So the government, so they don't lose out, will pay for a well-known producer to come in and record them live. How much does that cost? What? You know what I mean? Well, we can only have an hour's worth or half an hour's worth. It wasn't like, you know, the Beatles going in and spending 2 months to record. We had something like an hour to record the songs. They was totally live. That's the one that's now, one of them's now recorded by a video by a BAFTA award winning director, Ian Henderson. But at the time, they came in and they thought that had resolved it and that bit put them to bed. It didn't, because the guys like Angel Serpena and the producer, I went, no, they won the competition. We want to hear them in the studio. They've kept, it only gave more power because Angel started playing the recordings we did live on the radio. Radio 1's doing it, and it's all over Spain, All the jails are listening and all that, you know, and they're starting to worry, you know, there's going to be prison riots, you know, they don't let them out and stuff, you know, but seriously. So they've ended up, they've said that we can go out. Now, they tried to bribe, I didn't know this, and so yeah, there's good people there. They tried to bribe the producer to bring everything he had and record that, you know, a mobile, and he said no way was he going to do it, you know. And he could have sold out, you know, and, you know, went and made a buck and we would have done it for the jail. But he's like, you know. And I'd never heard this story until last year, but he was in the papers at the time. And he described it because where his old studio was a little village with the one street. And he described it, he thought it was the second invasion. He said, you know, there might be a slight exaggeration, but not a lot. Like, there was half a dozen armoured cars, there was police vans, we just full of policemen. Then there was like police cars, motorbikes. And then there would be off-duty guards. Then you've got all the press. Then you've got everybody's families. Then you've got just people wanting to turn up. He says his street, it was like a riot. And we're sitting inside, you know, we've not got a clue what's happening. And I told you the other thing about that one. It was so funny, I didn't find out probably as well. The bass player, Tito's passed away. He died of HIV during that period, well, shortly after that, never got out. And it's a shame because he had the opportunity to go. There was two guys sitting in a car outside armed to take him away. And he was enjoying the music that much. He said, no, we'll go in the next time. You know what I mean? Got a message out, you know. And the things you don't know until 30 years later, that's the guards telling me. Because obviously he was telling that when he knew he was dying. He was telling, you know, his stories and stuff like that.
Legends, the greatest social casino experience has arrived at Legends.com. With thousands of the best free-to-play casino-style games, chances to earn millions of bonus coins and win real money. Legends is revolutionizing the Vegas experience wherever you are. If you love winning, then you'll love playing at Legends.com. Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Visit Legends.com for more information. Legends with a Z.com is legendary fun.
Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, ugh, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
So we went out, recorded in the recording studio and all that, and that's the recording sessions, and it just went everywhere. And you've got to, if people have put you down, you, for no other reason, it must be this Scottish self-destruct thing. You know, things are going well, and oh, I've been out to play on the radio this morning, got this and all that. I'm not going out unless I get a shower. But you're going on the radio, don't care. The radio's coming at 9 o'clock in the morning, the showers don't get heated till 12 o'clock, so we'll have to heat the whole prison showers so you can have a shower. Okay. Now, nobody else knew about this. It's not like the whole jail's watching me doing a standoff, you know what I mean? And as the time's getting there, don't you want to go on the radio? I don't care. I don't give a... No pain, mate. I'm not getting any money. Why... If I want to hear me music, I'll go up to the cell and play it. And the guards are like Mexican standoff and they've got no way of winning. When it's getting too close to nine, the director's on there, you know, the like the phone you've got there, giving it, where the hell are they? He won't come until he gets a shower. Well, give him an effing shower. You know, that's them lost total face. So, sounds a great story, as I said to you, but in all these things, there's like repercussions. I've been back to the cell that night and I'm black and blue. You know, and it's like, how did you, oh, I must have fallen down the stairs again, you know what I mean? I'm very accident prone, mate. And the same thing, like, I wouldn't get my fingerprints taken. And I never thought about it. I'm putting everybody else, you know, I'm stopping all the other guys for going out. But I, because I didn't like the guard, you know, give me your finger. No, you don't take my fingerprints, I'm playing guitar. But we want your right hand. The guy actually was quite, I mean, you know, no, you're not taking them. No, I'm not getting out. Now, I'm stopping everybody going out and having a great day just to prove a point. I went out and I didn't get my fingerprints because they said, just take his frigging photograph. I'm not content to leave it at that. As I'm leaving, I've got to get the last dig, and I spoke fluent Spanish then. I'm at the guard going, so if I've not got my fingerprints, you're not going to let me back in then? Right. Asking for trouble or what, I've went back in and I'm getting, you know, a very nice welcome. And I never learned right up to the very last thing. Because when I did interviews recently with Ange House of Pena, he was like that. That time you came into the radio station, you would have heard it because it was delayed and went back an hour. And I went, no, Ange. And I didn't, because it was daytime news. I was like, nah. It took me a while to get back to the thing. But somebody recorded it for us. And I said, aye, Ange, you know, talk about it off camera. And so that was causing absolute chaos between, you know, there are decent people working in the prison system. They're just doing it because it's their job. They've got no. If you don't annoy them, they won't annoy you. I'm not sticking up for them. They could have chosen another job. But they're trying to help you, and there's other people just there because they've got a chip on their shoulder or they've got some psychological problem. You know, they feel inferiority and they can pick on you. And then they go home and the wife will batter them. You know what I mean? So we didn't know this. All these things are going on. And to be honest, we weren't helping by, you know, getting out and causing more grief. So we're all over the papers now. I've been told that the minute I get third grade open prison, which is guaranteed, they've got jobs, they've got tours, because all the other guys can play every night of the week. But I'm not the superstar, and I don't think that. But the gimmick was they've got a Scotsman singing who's writing in English, because there's 100 Spanish bands that are really good, but they're all the same. Whereas they've got a Scotsman who can speak fluent Spanish reasonably okay on the radio. He's in the jail for narco trafficking. It kind of gets a few people interested, you know what I mean? So, unfortunately, the other guys in the band weren't getting the same attention. So I'm still, when we're doing this, you've seen the paperwork, I'm not allowed out of the prison. But they bent the rules because I'm still not condemned. And it's got to the stage that it's the national finals things and all that. And beforehand, they've said that if I agree to take my sentence, which I should have done at the start, you know, I'll automatically get open prison. So I've agreed to it at the Christmas and the January's there. I do it every 3 months, not back. Because the guy that does the grading, he's the vice assistant director, who is the nasty guy. The director's all wanting avant-garde and change. Assistant director just wants to do anything to annoy the director. So I'm immediately not back, so I'm not happy. I showed you the little books, OCD, we've got every concert, every song, and there's a gap of 2 months. I just went, I'm not playing. But you can't go out and play guitar. You know what I mean? You won't go out to the radio. What are you going to do? Put me in jail. You know, and this is building up. The press hasn't forgot about us, and we've got to go out and do this concert. You know, it's the awards thing, you know, and I'm not doing that. But you'll miss out on the telly. So what? You know what I mean? I don't care. You know what I mean? What are you going to do? Put me in jail? You know what I mean? It's not. There's nothing you can do. And all of a sudden, and I never realised what it actually entailed until last year, because I had all this paperwork. Sean's seen it. It's actually on the website, and I didn't go and look at this stuff. We were looking for photographs last year, and I found all this paperwork, gave it to the social workers and the guards, and it was them that pointed it out to me. I didn't go looking for this, because I just get out of jail and never look back. They bribed me, and Sean's seen it. I've got, at this point, 2 grave sanctions against my name, which is the worst you can get before, you know, you've got to go to a judge and get resentenced. So that's not for, you know, nothing. And I've got awarded, you don't get a day off your sentence until you're condemned. Sean's seen the paperwork. I've got every day that I've served awarded as though I was working in the blinking kitchen or the doctor or something. I've got 2 years taken off my sentence. Instantly.
Alan, how did you earn the sanctions?
you don't want to, you know, you don't want to lose some ratings and things like that.
Well, these are the things people want to hear.
Well, there was a couple of people did things that we weren't happy with, and although they couldn't prove it, they had reasonable grounds. You know, I said that one thing that you've got the kid there. I'm digressing a bit, but to give it a bit of context. When I went into jail, I was like, you know, really sensitive in the, you know, the artistic one, not. And see, when I came out, people could die in front of me. I didn't want them to die, but it wouldn't affect me. You know, I just walk through life and not good, not bad, just numb. And my best friend, I won't embarrass her by saying who, and my nephew saved me from that because I could have feelings for them again, and it took gradual because I just couldn't. Because I remember Swiss-French guy, it was a captain, he'd been in his yacht and got caught, and he'd been in for years, and I'm about to help this guy. I didn't know what was wrong with him. I've never seen MD that had taken Brown, and he's lying there, and I'm going to help him, and this guy's like that, dragging me away. Don't you be so stupid. You know, like, one, you might catch something, two, you might turn around and hit you, you know, and he wouldn't do it for you. He says, you can't afford to feel anything for other people. And it's very hard to sort of switch off, but I could have the opportunity to let my mum and dad and that know, but I seen the effect it had on people when they got a letter late, you know. Nobody did anything bad to them, but it's just their whole life. And the smallest thing means so much to you. It can hurt you so much, you know. You don't get a phone call, or you get your money runs out on the phone just as your girlfriend's about to say something, and everything's blown out. So it was easy for me just to switch off. However, you're still human. And there was a couple of incidents where people were doing things to other people that we took offence to that.
You're talking about physical things?
Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Young kid that's never, he's in there for, you know, God knows what, but you know what I mean? And you've got a group of gypsies that are picking on them. And, you know, they've all got their stupid knives and all. And, they picked the wrong place to do it. Because while I was doing the music and that, Joel and Hi, my mate, they got into the weights and all. And we started off, it was hilarious. We got, like, the broom handles and big tins of fruit. And there was always construction work going on. We filled it with concrete. The problem is, they lifted it up once and the thing broke. Broke in half, you know, the things. And they kept asking for it and asking for it. And obviously, they're trying to find reasons to redeem people. And they actually gave them weights and all that, right? But those weights were like, you know, there was a gym class, and the only place that they could do it safely was the shower, because it had the tiled floor and all that. And a couple of boxes. No bench press thing. It was 2 foot boxes with a plank over it. And I'd started to go. I did a bit of the weights, but the music was coming in, and so I was getting off to go there and stuff like that. But they would be doing that, and you had to get a letter off the director, you know, please, your honourable director, can I join the weight workshop? And if they weren't in that and they caught in there, so nobody bothered them. But it happened to be one of the days that they're just finding up practising, and they were no doing nice things to like a young lad or whatever. And those sort of like the dumbbells and things like that, you know, the handles that are quite, and the weights and things like that. So there was quite a few gypsies ended up in the hospital, and they knew that there was only the three of us there and the wee guy, and it wasn't him. He actually was quite grim. He said he did it, you know, but it was like, you know, that was one of the things. And there was other things, you know, there was, again, never proven, but, you know, they make their own rules. Look, the amount of stuff that was going through that prison was surreal. And they couldn't put, it was just, you know, conduct unbecoming and, you know, conspiracy, you know, perverting the things, you know what I mean? I told you the thing I'd completely forgotten about till somebody was looking at some of my notes and all that, and I told you I didn't think it. I thought it was a sort of common occurrence because it comes across a lot bigger than what it is, but then I suppose it is quite big. Oh, where did you get that money from? I was bodyguard to one of the Cali cartel accountants. And it's like, what? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, well, I wasn't like getting out shooting people, bodyguarding. Well, what were you doing then? Oh, yeah, well, I kind of was bodyguarding because they had the problem in the Medellin, and Medellin were sorted in Madrid. You know, they were all the big boys, but down in Murcia, there's only a couple of guys. The guys I was saying to you that did the thing, they were down there for making toilet seats out of cocaine and selling them to the Spanish Parliament. A few guys down there. And what had happened is one of the Cali cartel, nobody knew about cartels and that. You know, kids of 15 know who Carlos Escobar is. You could ask a Spanish copper and he wouldn't know who he was in the 80s because they were in the States and there was no MTV and YouTube and whatever. But little guy was down and being in the nephew, the Marseille Mafia, and all that, Joe was pretty well connected. Now, I spent ages trying to get a cell on my own because, you know, you could get anybody in the cell. And sometimes you just accept somebody in your cell because at least you knew who he was. Otherwise, they just put the next person coming in, you know. But again, I've just got to push it. I've like, oh, the paperwork is sitting there. I've got a cell on my own. It's taken me months to get it, but it's a reasonable one. They can handle it. I've got to go up to the cell and compose the music because it's taken off. They went, that's not the worst thing you've asked for, you know what I mean? We'll go for that. Within about a week of it, I have got this old Colombian guy in. You've just asked for all that. And it, Joel couldn't get the choice of cells. You know, he had somebody in with his. And this guy was coming down. Will you put him in your cell? He's sorted, you know what I mean? You've got to look after this guy. I've never ate so well in my life till now. You know what I mean? It was unbelievable. This guy was so high up, you know what I mean? He had, like, even the guys, the sort of administrative guys that didn't like us for the music, he's old school. But old school was into all the bribing and all that, you know what I mean? So this guy is getting, God knows what he's getting. He's coming in with platters of ham, fruit, occasionally like a bottle of wine and stuff like that. But not, you know what I mean? But I'm talking about everybody is in our thing. Even got a little... It was, they were using it in the kitchen, but somehow it ended up in our cells. It's a thing for the fondue or something like that. There's something that they have a naked flame, just like a wee camping gas thing. You know, you couldn't ask for a camping gas stove, but somehow it ended up in our cell and you could heat little things, you know what I mean? And we've got all, like, you know, it's like salmon came in, all that Spanish ham that I can't stand, but it's really, really expensive. You know, patisseries and all that, and it's like, there's people coming for cells all around, the other garlic, the guards are coming in and eating its cheeses and all that. It's like, bloody hell, you know what I mean? And it's like, you know, it was quite a good time, you know what I mean? We ate all right. And like, then he got his trial and went away. But it was like, saying about that, I'd forgotten all about that. And it was just somebody was saying to me, why are you down in Liverpool? Says, when you get out of the jail, you've been down to Essex and that, you meet a few people and went, that's right. Why are we down in Liverpool about a year or so later? And I'm like, I can't remember. And it was when I was doing stuff with the director and he was wanting to know the dates of a couple of things. I found this thing. You have seen it yourself. It's the details of a bank transfer into the, was it the National Savings Bank from a bank account in Spain for £17,000, which probably is about 100 grand or something now. That was like 90s for services rendered. And I had to get a passport. I had to apply for a passport. And they're like, why do you want a passport? You've just been deported. You can't go anywhere. And it wasn't like now you needed, you could have said, I wanted to vote. You know, it's my voter thing or something. No, it was like, you're not going anywhere. I just want a passport. That's it. You know what I mean? All right. And they took as long to get it and went along and got that one.
So on the subject of the cartel, and I wrote a book called The Cali Cartel. Gilberto was, you know, one of the bosses. And yeah, he got nailed in Spain, didn't he, with Jorge Ochoa from the Medellin guys. It was like really big, high-profile arrests. Were they incarcerated around the time you were incarcerated?
Yes. What happened was this all took place, the music thing took place in Murcia, which was... it wasn't nice, but like then what happened was when it all became... We were in the news everywhere and all that, and they were getting fed up with us. Unbeknown to MD, somebody's done a sort of behind-the-scenes things, And I'm thinking that I'm going out to the open prison. And I found myself in a place called Carabanchel. Now, I mentioned it to the likes of Chet Santu, who has done time in Spain, and Chet went, oh my God, you know, and he's only heard of it years later. Well, I was there, and that was before Amnesty International got in, seen it. Then Amnesty International did the report, they reformed it, and then they came in again so many years later. So you can imagine what it was like before that. It was not nice.
What was the toilets like?
What do you mean toilets?
How did you do a number one and a number two?
A hole in the ground.
A hole in the ground.
Aye.
And was that like the hole in your cell, or was that somewhere else?
No, that's just like a wall, like a wooden plank. Yeah. And there's a hole in the plank.
Yeah.
And that just gets, supposedly gets sluiced, but that's not a very pleasant place to go.
And did they give you anything to wipe your ass with?
No.
What's the...
water you're supposed to, like the Moroccan way.
Yeah.
In Murcia, they had, like some of the cells had toilets.
Yeah.
But in Carabanchel, no. Carabanchel was built in 1930-something, and it was built by the political prisoners when Franco took over. And there's seemingly the ghosts of thousands, because they built the prison. And you can imagine the conditions were worse when they were building it. And that was it started off as dissidents, you know, political activists, trade unions. Then it got to, if you complained about the train being late, you know, you'd end up, you know what I mean? But that place in the 80s was only category one. But it was in the thousands of people there. You know, that was the bogeyman. You could be the baddest guy, you know, in Malaga, and there's 20 guys, Cat A. That whole prison is Cat A.
Is that where they put the cartel bosses?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Carabanchel was considered, if you Google it, you've got a laptop, Google it, Carabanchel prison. It was considered the most dangerous prison in Europe at that time. People died on a daily basis. I was looking at, there's a programme on just now about Barlini in Glasgow, and I was looking at the floors and three floors up, and there's security things. People just get lamped over. You just hear a thud and you go, oh no, again. You know what I mean? That's it. You know, bodies. I'd lie there for, you know, ages, and somebody eventually go, go and clean that up.
What were you at?
Yeah, it'd be just like people getting thrown off, you know. Like,
how often did that happen?
Daily. I mean, and there was no...
I mean, like, all right, you've seen someone die in the background. Like,
people just like... And lucky did he knock the chess pieces over, it's your move.
Doesn't that take some getting used to?
That's what I'm saying. You become numb to that.
So, you know, describe the first time this happened. You saw someone die in prison.
Would have been someone dying for an overdose, probably, in Murcia. And in Murcia, was a lot more peaceful. That's in the hundreds of prisoners, you know, on an open bit. So that builds you. Murcia in itself would be the worst prison in the UK. You know what I mean? That would scare the bejesus out of anybody that's ever done time. And that was an easy one. Because then Carabanchel is just like, you know, that is just off the charts. That's like, the guys, I'm not saying this, there's guys that you've met who write books, and they've said, name the worst prison. And they've done, like, Spanish, they've done French, they've done, and they're like, Carabanchel, you know what I mean?
The person who overdosed, how did you encounter that situation?
I've seen people overdosing all the time.
Just the first one, though?
That's what I'm saying, I was with the French guy, and there's a guy dying in front of me.
He's dying in front of you?
Yeah, and I'm wanting to go and help him. And Jean-Claude, or Jean something, is like, ah, leave him.
Oh, that guy died, did he?
Yeah, don't get involved. And I'm like, this is like weeks into it, you know what I mean?
Yeah, so that was the first one.
Yeah, but then people aging, hepatitis and that were, you know, rife. There's bodies all around the place. But there was bodies of non-natural causes as well, you know, and, you know, not so much in Murcia because there wasn't enough people. It wasn't as bad. But there was sanctioned, you would almost call it, murders. Because the guards, and this is not making things up, you know, there is plenty of other people would, you know, would be able to back that up. That somebody say it's done somebody really bad, you know, children or something like that, you know, is put in there. The guards would put them in with like some sort of rapist or something like that, who's a mass murderer or something like that, like Fred West or something like that. And they'd have bets how long they would last. You know, and you hear the screams and all that, and they weren't moving. You know, and you're like, you know, but hey, didn't do what they'd done.
What was the death that shocked you the most?
None of them. After seeing that, that's what I said, that's what I became. I didn't like the person because I didn't feel anything. You know, but I wasn't the only one. I'm not saying like, no, you just get used to that. You see that, you know, it's like, I'm not putting human life, devaluing human life, but you see like an ant dying, or maybe you're into pets and you see a pet dying and it really upsets you, and then you go to somewhere where you see that all the time. You become immune to it. You know, you don't get upset every day you see something happening. You know, if you worked in a slaughterhouse and you like chickens or something like that, you know, well, don't go for work for Colonel Sanders or whatever, but you will become immune. It's not saying you don't care, but you don't get the same. So when these things are happening all the time, whether you like it or not, it's a safety mechanism. Because, and also, if you were to, you wouldn't be here, or well, I wouldn't be here, if you went and been a good Samaritan to everybody. Because you wouldn't get past a couple of days. It's not a nice thing to say, and it took me, like, you've got Ziggy, brings out your good nature, and you can be compassionate and all that. But at that point, you know, people go, ah, it's, no, it is, you talk about life and death, you don't know what life and death means. You know what I mean? That is life and death. You know what I mean? When somebody in a split second can take your life, whether you like it or not, you know what I mean?
All right, so, you know, you get immune to it because there's so much of it. But there must have been some, you know, perhaps through violence or something, there was some situations that particularly stand out in your mind.
Oh, I mean, there's crazy stuff happened, you know, like violence-wise, you know, like, that I've seen. One of the ones I got, could have been potentially a really bad one for me, was when I got my marching orders up to go to Madrid, and I've just arrived there. Now, there's a guy, Christopher Chance. I'd been telling people for 10 years, and because there was no internet, I was in this place where there was 20 people in a cell, and I thought, oh, shut up. We were in Malaga, and there was 20. We were in Alicante, there wasn't 20. Christopher Chance brought a book out about 2000 or something like that. I've been talking this for 10 years. All of a sudden, it's in print. Oh, in Carabanchel, there was this one place called the Bronx, where if you were really bad or somebody really didn't like you, you get put in there. Now, how would I know about that if I wasn't in there? And I told you, it wasn't being brave or anything. I got moved and I got bussed around like all the different jails in Spain for days, you know, just to annoy me. I'd leave in the morning before breakfast and arrive after dinner. And they were so obliging in some places, they would actually take me in my own bus, you know what I mean, just to, you know, like, just to really annoy me. And the money would be gazed behind, and it was just to, because, you know, somebody had got fed up with our antics, and they moved us to Madrid. Now, I'm supposed to be going to the open prison. I'm in Mackay. I'm not even content that I'm in maximum security. They put me in the maximum security where the bad people in maximum security go. You know, and this is some guard or somebody like that is thought, or some governor or that. Right, we'll sort him right out now. And, but for the grace of God, I wouldn't be here. As I was explaining to you earlier, the cell is just the same as the cells we had in Murcia. Not any bigger or smaller or longer. But it's like four up or five up in the same space. So there's no room you can shoulder width to walk down in between the things. And people hang their sheets down so there's a bit of privacy between the beds. And I've walked in, and it's like all of a sudden all these people are coming towards me, and I'm like, this ain't ending well here. And, you know, I don't know, maybe a guard said, you know, give him, you know, a good kick and then he'll give you an extra, you know, plate of soup or something. Or whether, you know, they thought I had, or it was just like initiation ceremony, but this was the dregs of society. And, like, whoever's up there looking after me was looking after that day, because I caught a guy coming from peripheral vision. He was kind of behind the door coming in. And I wasn't doing anything special. I just grabbed him like that. Now, I had nightmares about this, you know, and no telling to sound like some hard guy. This guy is connected to the edge, and it's metal bunk beds, and there's corners like that. That corner has went in there. Now, I don't know what happened to that guy. You know, I had not nightmares, but I was like, I couldn't be a bully because I worry too much about hurting other people. But that guy got a severe clout, and the other guys parted. Now, they would have, that was just shock. They would have probably got their group collective consciousness together again and came back for me. But luckily at that point, a few of the English guys had heard. I was supposed to be there waiting for me to arrive there. And where the hell is he? And, well, there's no one here, where is he? And, you know, a guard's come up with him and go, what the hell's he doing? That somebody, you know, put in, you know, I wasn't supposed to be there, but somebody's got it in and put us there. And that was like, really, could have been really bad.
So his face was bashed in, or his eye came?
His whole thing was all, his pit, like basically the corner of a metal bed.
Yeah.
And it's just, I didn't mean it that, you couldn't do that if you meant it. It's just the way he's just went full force, you know, and his thing, I don't know.
Did his eye come out?
I get pulled away.
Yeah.
I don't even know if they, I don't, I'm not saying, oh, I killed him or that. I don't think so. But
yeah.
I just get the guys, the English guys, just dragged me right away before anything was, but see, in any other prison, you'd be taken to your thing. There wasn't even a report on that.
Legends, the greatest social casino experience has arrived at Legends.com. With thousands of the best free-to-play casino-style games, chances to earn millions of bonus coins and win real money. Legends is revolutionizing the Vegas experience wherever you are. If you love winning, then you'll love playing at Legends.com. Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Visit Legends.com for more information. Legends with a Z.com is legendary fun.
Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, ugh, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams whew,
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
As calm as you've been around all these people and all these situations, how you've described how calm you've been, during that moment when you go in this place, did that get your adrenaline up?
Aye. Yeah, it got my attention.
And they were all coming at you like something out of a horror movie.
Yeah, but it's because this guy is coming from here.
Yeah.
He's taking the focus, and it's just kind of, get, you know, if you're all that side, I don't have to watch my back.
Yeah.
And that's all I did. He smacked off that. You know, he's in between us and them. And at that point, the other guys come in. You know what I mean?
So how many of them were coming at you at that point?
All of them.
How
well,
many?
It seemed like, well, there's 20 in it, so there's me. There's almost 18 at that side. Well, whether they're all coming, some could be sitting in their beds. But, you know, it was in, it wasn't...
What do you think would have happened if you hadn't got rescued?
I'd be dead.
Wow.
Yeah, definitely, yeah. That's...
Someone's looking out for you there.
I mean, I told you the one, did I say the one about my first day? Did I say that earlier about the Moroccan guy, him getting the eye wound? Did we say that on this? Yeah.
The one that you knocked out, the big guy who became your friend?
Aye.
Yeah, we did that one earlier on, didn't we? Yeah, yeah. And you talked about getting stabbed with the rat,
yeah.
With the rat poo.
Aye. And
I mean, you went over that one quite quickly. Like, where did that go in?
I'll show you, I'm not taking me to, because I'm not getting cut in. It's there, and you can still see it.
Could you feel it go in?
I felt I was punched.
Like you were punched.
It was a...
How long did it take you to realise what happened?
Everyone's felt a punch and that was all. And this is in the queue. And the other guys, obviously, they've seen what's happened. You know, the guys know, gypsies don't punch you. You know, they've not got the balls to do it, the cojones to do it, shall we say. You know, they do things behind your back. So the other guys have come chasing over. And, I mean, it's not hit anything, obviously. It was just like a bump, you know. And it's like, you know, like that. Go up the stairs. And by then, all that stuff's taking place. You know, I'm, you know, the guy, poor guy who's with me, he's thinking I'm going to die and he's going to get the blame and all that. You know what I mean? He's battering on the cell door. Apparently, I'm out of it. I don't know what's happening.
So the rat poo causes your brain to scramble, does it?
It's like bubonic plague or something that you've just been infected with. It's like a highly, you know, it's bad stuff. I mean, you can do it with that. The other one as well, the more intelligent people try to do as well, you can make your own cyanide.
What's the formula?
No formula. One of the things they've got a lot of in prison, I told you about the crap fruit and all that, peaches.
Seeds?
Peaches, the shell. And you get...
Wow.
And you do know it's working because you get the almond smell.
Did you see it utilised on people? Yeah.
I didn't see it utilised. I seen people getting carted out afterwards, you know, and you can put two and two together, you know, and oh, somebody's been... But it takes quite a lot of peaches and you've got to have a lot of patience.
What about the weaponization of crap? Did you see more of that? Like,
that was used... That was just if somebody really wanted to make sure. You know what I mean? Normally, particularly the gypsies, it's a macho thing. They weren't interested. They just want to show off. It's like, you know, marking you, you know, because they wouldn't have the balls to go in a knife fight, you know, and they come out with their little...
Yeah.
It's the razor and the toothbrush and all that. No, it's like, come on. We were brought up with Stanley knives. And in Glasgow, they don't even have one Stanley knife. They put two Stanley blades next to it so you can't stitch you up. Did you know that? In Glasgow, they don't just do you with one... Blink would have told you that. They used to have one Stanley knife, right? So that gives you a scar and you go to the hospital and they stitch it up and that's fine. Glasgow evolved a new way of doing it, the knife capital of Europe. Not just one Stanley blade, they put two in the one Stanley holder. That way you've got two running parallel and the doctors can't stitch you. Only in Glasgow could be. We can't discover how to, you know, cure cancer, but we can make sure your scar doesn't go away.
How easy was it to get weapons or make weapons in Spanish prison?
I imagine it's as easy as anywhere else. I seen that in Berlin and I couldn't believe it when they're counting razors and all that. Jeez. No, I'm just get handed, you get a bag of razors. You know, my life, I don't remember everyone saying, you know, you're not getting out of prison because you've not handed back your razor. No, you know what I mean? No, there's razors going about. But the razors and that were getting more used for like other things, you know what I mean? People just like, you can get people that are desperate and get very inventive. They were using razor blades to cut the veins because they didn't have needles and then using things like the tube out of a pen. You know, taking all the ink out, but there's still some ink in there. It can be good for you getting in your veins. And then putting the in that because they didn't have, like, the, what do you call it, the gear or the kit.
Yeah.
It's like, really? But then again, these people are doing that along with somebody that they actually know is HIV positive. So, you know, to them that seems like a really clever idea.
Chet said there was a lot of HIV when he was there.
It was bad, but it came and it went because I think it just basically killed everybody that was that way and then it sort of got a lot less.
Was there young prisoners coming in who were getting taken advantage of in that way?
Yeah. Murcia didn't have a lot of young people. There was a young ward, there was like a women's one. I don't know, it was 20, 21, something like that. They were there till. But back in those days, there wasn't a lot of. Murcia's like in the middle of nowhere. Malaga was all the Costa del crime. So you'd have credit card people in there. There was loads of British, you'd have like armed robbers, you'd have drug things and that. Murcia's in the middle of Spain. You know, in that particular place, there wasn't that kind of crime. It was somebody stealing somebody's, you know, chicken or something like that, you know what I mean? So you don't get a lot of young kids, you know. And, you know, that's why, you know, it was kind of obvious, you know, and there was a young kid coming in, you know, it would be unusual. You know, if it happened every week, you wouldn't, you know, that's why the guys took so much offence, you know what I mean? Because it was, oh my God, that... It was very unusual, so... But in Madrid, I didn't have kids coming in. You know, I'd probably been one of the youngest and I was like in my mid-20s because that is hardcore, you know. You've got to have done some serious, you know. You can't have committed the crimes that you to be there, you know, by 21. Do you know what I mean? That was like... you're talking about the... Medellin cartel. Well, the Medellin cartel, if anybody's watching Narcos in the 80s, I think it's Ochoa, is it Griezmann brothers and that, done up there. They were in there. And it's on the TV series Narcos. They meet up with the Galicians. Galicians have been pirates because it's a coastal thing, fishermen. They were the best smugglers in Spain. So they've, all right, yeah, wait a minute. You smuggle, we've got all this, yeah, this white stuff. Why don't we get together? And that is documented in Netflix. And if you look at the time, oh, when did that take place? Oh, it was about 1990. Oh, all right, oh, 92. Where were you? Ah, well, funnily you should say that. But I'm not claiming to know them and that. I'm just saying, you know, yes, similar, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it was a big story. What about the French Connection?
French Connection, Joel, my sort of best mate in there, he got caught with a couple of articulated lorries. Never want to do things on a small scale. Joel had two articulated lorries full of green stuff going up the coast. And he was like one of these guys that he'd never, you know, he's like a playboy, you know. He just lived the life. He was down in Marbella and all this, and his yachts and all that, and he's the heir apparent to the French mafia. His uncle was apparently, this wasn't him telling me, this is other French people, do you know who he is? His uncle is the guy that you see in the films, The French Connection, you know, the head, you know, that if it was Don Corleone and the Godfather thing, he's the guy in that, and that was his nephew. And he was like brilliant to me. He just used to talk about when we could start talking together, you know, we'd have to get interpreters, but he sort of knew that, you know, not saying we looked down on other people, but you know, you got folk that you couldn't trust, and there was no, he's been brought up with the attack, even though he's French mafia, it's still the mafia, you know, the Omerta and the code of honour, and you know, and don't be doing this, and you know, what's right is, you know, a code of practice, you know, and the rest of them weren't worth it, you know what I mean? And sort of we get thing made. And the thing was, you know, the guy trusted me a lot because I was one of the few people in there that actually knew his name because he couldn't go out. We tried to get him as a singer, but they knew he wasn't who he was because it was better for him to do whatever the Spanish thing, even if he spent the rest of his life there, then go back to France under what his real name was. Because what would await in him would not be worth, you know, because of who he was, there'd be so many people with grudges against his family, whether that's other criminals, other convicts, the prison guards, you know, police, politicians, they would all be wanting a chunk of him. So even though he'd know, Murcia was quite a, you know, it's a holiday camp for him, you know what I mean? He was like, oh, cut you up, you know. But, I mean, I never knew what happened to him because I got deported and all that, you know, that was it. And with him, That was his drummer. His drummer was the supposed drummer in Berlin, 90 Michel. And he was I'm sure it was his fault that they got arrested, you know what I mean? Because Michel, you ask him to be in one place and he'd be in another. Not out of badness, he just didn't. The wee man's got more responsibility than Michel had.
What was your punishment when you got caught with your brewery?
Nothing, they laughed.
They laughed?
Seriously, that's what I'm saying. Sometimes we get away with murder. Because they were just like, and they went like, I went, look, Esco says Scottish whiskey. And because I wasn't doing brown stuff, I wasn't causing any, you know what I mean? Aye, I suppose, like, you know what I mean? Aye, fair enough. He took it away and poured it away, like, you know what I mean? But
what's your drink? You drink?
What?
It's empty.
Later than that, a few of the guards, not because we're famous now, because we've been there for a while, and, you know, we maybe help them out some way or t'other, or, you know what I mean, not in any sort of illegal way, you know, their friends might have benefited for something, or somebody was having problems, you know, and another thing, their relative would get jailed in Madrid, and, oh, could you sort that out and bring you in a bottle of whiskey or something like that, you know what I mean? And then, oh, we can get one bottle, we can get two. Because once you've gone down that slippery slope, you can't say I'm not doing it anymore, and that's what, you know. Did we say about the one about the premisa? I know I told you the first time I got out, and the poor guy that was supposed to have signed for me, did we do it on this?
No.
Oh. Just when the band started getting out, they were giving us like liberty type thing, you know, like you've got to get signed by like a sponsor. So it was the Spanish manager of the band, and he's like, you're not going to run away in that. Of course I'm not, but we've been out that many times playing concerts, you're going to do it, you do it day one. So we've got out. Now we've known for ages when we're going to get out, and he comes up, picks me up in the morning, takes me to where he works, go for a beer and that, I've got to finish off work and come back. And he's had to sign in blood, and I'm going to his house, and his wife's got the spread, the kids know we're coming and that. And of course, you take a Scotsman to a bar and he's going to drink. And he's taken to this bar, and it must have been thought, I'll leave him here and he'll be safe. It must have been the most boring bar in the whole of Spain. And that's to somebody that's not had a drink for 2 years, and it was dying. And I'm like, okay, here we go. And I was like, and I hear music down the road. It's a bit lively. This bar has actually got posters up and it looks a bit tidier. This other one was just boarded windows and all that, you know what I mean? And I walked in, got a drink, and I told you, couldn't make it up. After about 30 seconds, our song's playing on the radio. And I'm like, oh no, here we go. And I'm saying to the barmaid, you know, that's me. And she's like, aye, right. No, I'm saying, oh no, I'm speaking in Spanish. I'm going, no, it's... And I've shown them the prison papers, and she's like, oh, that is you. Oh, I'll get you a drink. And I'm thinking, this is my luck's in here. You know, she knows the music and all that. And as I told Sean, I can make this some fantasy story, but what actually happened was her boyfriend, who was a monster, has come out the kitchen, and he loves the band and bought us a drink and all that. And we've sort of lost, I've not been used to drinking for a while, and I've lost track of all time. Now, there's this poor guy that signed for me on pain of death. He's responsible for my, you know, taking me from A to B. He's gone back after leaving me for a couple of hours, and I'm nowhere to be seen. So I think he was concerned, because I've forgotten the fact that you've got, if you get out in Bristol and you're going to Manchester, you might get out it, but you've got it at 6 o'clock at night, check in Manchester, because, you know, at the police station. Oh, I'm not caring. And somebody reminded us, and by that time I don't know where I'm coming or going. They've taken me around to the Guardia Civil office. I'm probably singing and dancing, and the guys just thought it was hilarious, because they knew the story behind the band, and there are some alright people, and for a laugh they put on the Blues and Twos. And we found out the guy only stays about two streets down. Now this poor guy is thinking, oh my god, my career, I'm going to lose the music school, the wife and kids will be homeless, I might go to jail, I'm getting done for jailbreaking this guy, you know. And he hears the Blues and Twos coming up his street. He must have been dying. And they've dropped me to the thing, you know, they're all over the balcony. And they're like, ah, you come down here and get him. And I'm literally went up and they've opened the door to the kid's bedroom and I'm just like and that same time, Michelle, the responsible one, as a favour, because it's my best mate, the stuff that was in there wasn't great because it's, and some people from Malaga had brought some very high quality stuff, and it's like, I wouldn't do it for money, I wouldn't do it under pressure, I wouldn't do it for anything else, because it's my mate, and this poor guy's going to be in there, and I'm out on, you know, I'm out on holiday for a week, and my best mate's stuck there, and all that, right, I'll take some wee bit back in from, now Michelle, you will bring this up to me, so I know how it's done, wrap dozens of times in cling film, all that, yeah, yeah, no problem. It's getting to like about 9 or 10 o'clock on the day. I'm going back in the next day. No sign of Michelle. Now, I'm living with this family, you know, they're up and about. He's arrived, like, off his face, like, 11 o'clock, midnight, with a block. And I'm like, what the, you know, what do you do? You're supposed to, so I'll just go, you know, and then, no, he's, I've had to wait till, like, because it's my last night. Everybody's went, oh, last night, nobody's gone to bed till like 3 o'clock in the morning. And then I've got to try in my analytic head, how do I get that? I know what it's going to look like. And there's not enough cling film in the world that is going to make me happy, that that's not going to burst in me. I've seen these horror stories, but it falls, it's for me. Actually, now these things were probably like that, you know what I mean? It got done, but that's the one and one only. And that was just for a mate. That was like, I think it was 125 grams worth. It's, well, it was going there. It wasn't going there, that's for sure. And that was the weirdest thing, because the more you want to go to the toilet, I'm sure I've eaten sweet corn and it's appeared within hours. That stuff took like 5-6 days to go through my system. It just was not budging, and the more I wanted to go, and you can't go to the doctor and say, can I have syrup of figs or something like that, or whatever, and it's like, and I then found out why, you know, a lot of people call that stuff SHIT, well, because when it comes out and it drops in a newspaper, who's cleaning it, you know what I mean, and it's like, see, oh, horrible.
So you got moved to Santander, El Dueso.
Not content to put me in the world's worst prison when they couldn't hold me back anymore. I'm just about to leave. They decide that they'll put me as far away from Malaga as possible. So they moved me to Santander, which is only what, a couple hundred miles from here, really, isn't it? It's the closest point, really, to the UK, isn't it? Santander, most northerly. And if anyone looks at the website or looks up El Dueso prison, it was the oldest prison in Spain. I've been in the roughest one, so now moving to the oldest one, which is a Napoleonic fort. So you can imagine it's not got a lot of mod cons. And this place has only got like a kind of kid on wall on one side, because it is actually the last bit of Spain. It's the biggest prison in Spain in yardage. You can walk for miles because you're not going anywhere. It's like a cape or a promontory that's like the White Cliffs of Dover on three sides and a wall on the other. And that's where they put me in the open prison. Because in the open prison, you can go out during the day to go to the doctors, to go to the library, to go to that. You need a Sherpa or something like to find civilization where they put us. There's no chance. It's just to mess you about even more. God, those missionaries don't get that far, you know what I mean? And it's just to, you know, like, really, really, you'd really annoy you. And, of course, they put me up there in January. I was like, the walls up there, you could heat them with a blowtorch and they wouldn't get warm, you know what I mean? And they're thick as end, you know, they're gun, you know, it's a fort, you know, it's 5 foot, like, what? That's not, you know, oh, it was mental. And then that's where they released me. And they told you the story, they released me.
What about the hippie commune?
Hippie commune, oh, that's mad. They gave us one of the 6-day things. Now, I couldn't go, I wouldn't, it would take me 3 days to get down to Malaga. So this sort of head of a commune, like a priest, whatever, the whole beard and the long hair and all that. And it was great, I think, because it was all boy young women. There wasn't one guy in the commune thing. He signed for us, you know what I mean? And he'll look after us for the 6 days. And went over there, and it was like, they're all making, like, you know, vegetarian this and tofu and homemade mayonnaise. And this guy's like, you know, like, this is like David Koresh, Jesus type thing. And I'm like, there, no, of course, like, I'm like, going out and, oh, you put wine in the, you know what I'm like. And it was quite surreal being there, you know what I mean? It didn't convert me, obviously. And that was this sort of one-off one there, just to get out. You know, you can go there or you can stay here. Go there, like, you know what I mean? There's no, that's a no-brainer. And then when they eventually did release me, there's one bus a day goes to the place. So they've specifically timed it. So the bus is just gone. I can see it going. And, like, no public phone boxes. This is places in the middle of nowhere. I'm chatting on the door. You're not coming back in. Can I use the phone? No. The next bus is not till 6 o'clock or something like that. Now, had I been able to phone a taxi, I could have got to the next town and got some. No. So I got to wait to the next bus. By the time the next bus arrives, I'm in, I think it's Bilbao. Too late. I've missed the last train. I've got to get the train there. So that's one day completely gone. The next day, Bilbao to Madrid. That's another thing. Because they'd given us, the way they worked the days, they paid money. I had to go along to the police commissary to get the money. And they gave me the train ticket, I showed you it and all that. And I've eventually arrived down in Malaga. And the whole thing that's been in the back of my mind during this whole thing is that the only thing that's appeared on my sort of rap sheet and charge sheet is the sort of green stuff. Although, allegedly, there was a substantial amount of the white stuff underneath the passenger seat that nobody knew about apart from me and one other guy. And that's been there for 4 years. And it's like, you know, you call yourself an optimist, you know, you go like, well, what's the chance of it being there? But then the other side of your brain's going, well, if they found it, you did get charged, so they couldn't have found it. No, but they could have found it and taken it themselves because it's not unheard of, you know what I mean? It's not been the first time. Ah, but what the hell? So I'm all the way down and I've went to the car hire place. Now, this guy's not really very pleased to see me. He's told me, I took that effing car, you know, hired it out. I got it back 2 years later. Like, you know, he said that. And by the time he'd got it, you could only lease it for the insurance of that for one more year, and then after three years they've got to resell it. I'm like, oh, well, that's it. He says, and just as I'm going, he says, aye, but like Jose, Juan, whatever, the butcher around the corner, he bought the car off me. And I'm like, really? Do you want me to come round? And I'm like, aye, he's only interested in going round there because we pass a pub and I'll buy him a brandy. I've been round and I'm like that. Now, this poor guy has no idea that this car has spent 2 years in a police impound, has been involved in, you know, trafficking drugs, allegedly, and all that. He just thinks he's bought this car with a really low mileage and he's got a right bargain. And I went to the guy, what is it? He said, oh, no, I had this car, you know, and years ago when I was on holiday and I lost my mum's chain or my Ray-Bans or something like that, it's like that, right? And he's opened the driver's, no, that's it. And they're talking away and I went under them. Jeez. And that was what it was, quite a substantial amount of that. Now, I'm due to fly. By this time, I've only got about 8 hours left and I'm flying out of Malaga Airport. There's no mobile phones, you know. And if you were looking for somebody, I'd know, for example, Sean is always in that pub on a Friday. He's there on a Tuesday or his mate drinks there. So you're going round all the regular haunts. But it's daytime and nobody's out till night, you know. And by that time, it's... And by luck with habit, I bumped into somebody that knew this guy that it sort of belonged to. And I've got him, and I went, I've got something for him. It's like, you couldn't believe it. It's not, nobody knew he was getting out. And, oh, man, you know, oh, I owe you so much, you know, you could have put, you could, you know, you could ask, I was mortified, you know, I thought it was all, oh, months, I didn't sleep and all. Then I've handed them the stuff. He said, what are you doing? I said, well, it's yours. He says, no, that's yours, mate. You after I owe you big style. And I'm like, no, you know what I mean? You know, I'm just doing it for me. And he's like, all right, you know, I've got to give you something for that. And I said, no, I'm going home and flying them. Don't give me in because it's going to get taken off me. And then he's went like, and when was it you got? I mean, I'm like, well, 87. The stuff's been absolutely terrible for years. That's like vintage, that's like Dom Perignon. Oh, this other thing. And all he did was, and you know how people talk, especially after they've had a couple of things, he's swearing on, you know, Heather's lives and all that, that, you know, and stacks of Bibles that never let you down. You, I love you to bits, you know what I mean, with a couple of drinks as well, you know, and you're the best thing ever. And I'm like, aye, right. No, I can give us my mum's phone number. You know, that's it, you know. And I swear to God, about 3 or 4 weeks after I got there, mum's like, do you know somebody, there's something. By this point, we started getting, you didn't, when I left for Spain, you didn't have folk phone in your house during Coronation Street trying to sell you double glazing, which I then became. Not for that reason, but you know, like, do you know somebody called this? And I'm like, no. Oh, aye, it might be. Do you know that pub and thing, mate? Aye, right, aye, okay, yeah. You know, aye, right, fine. That, my mum and dad, my dad had just retired at that point. My mum couldn't you like have him about the house, so he got put out taxiing just to get him for under his feet. So taxi drivers, you've got no income, he's like 50-something. He's not getting a mortgage in a million years. And Margaret Thatcher just put out, you could buy your council house. But you had to put down a certain amount of money. That money bought that council house, you know what I mean? And it's so funny, you know what I mean? It's like, you go like, Jesus, you know. And it was just this, now, it's not, I've done anything heroic. No, I left a bag under a car, but it's like these crazy things that 4 years later or whatever, that bag is under there. And then the guy, because I trusted him, there's no reason, you know, I'm not going to come back and do it. He's actually phoned up my mum's and got, my mum's living in this council house, you know, her own, first one in the whole generations that ever owned their own home. How did you think it got paid for? You know what I mean? Oh, we bought our own home. I funded by Columbia. And that was this real stuff. And obviously got back to the UK and all that.
What was it like for you to be back?
I was saying to you, I was lucky because my nephew was just a little bit younger than Ziggy and got handed him. And that was like another sort of madness. The guys want to give me money, I'm like, give it to my mum, because I've got a fair idea. I've not got a passport, I've got a train ticket, and I have to go and pick up. I've got no ID, no nothing. I have to go to Malaga Airport to go to the customer service. What's happened is my mum, she didn't know where I was for about 3 or 4 years. And in order to deport me, somebody's got to take me. You can't just deport you to nowhere. You know, you can't just, you know, what do? Take you to France? France might not want you, or they take you and throw you out in the sea. So they had to figure out, you know, and somebody somewhere found out it was mum, she gets this thing, you know, your son's here. Oh, is he? I started getting the letters and all, and, you know, just before I made. And she had to book a holiday from Glasgow to, like, Torremolinos without anybody going on it, just so I could have the return flight going home. Because you didn't, it was only package deals then, you couldn't buy flights and all that, so I've got to be, and it's literally cutting it really fine, you know, there's a few hours to spare, you know what I mean, for me to get there. So I've travelled, I don't know, what is it, the whole length of Spain, 1,000 kilometres over 3 days on my own. And I'm going to the airport, which they're asking me to do. And I get there, go to check in, and the next thing I know, it's like, boom, it's like, what the hell? Machine guns, you know, the riot gear and everything, what the... Into an office. Now, they took, like, watches and jewellery, and it wasn't a lot of money. They left me my songbooks, and for some reason they couldn't have been smokers, because they left me a couple of cartons of cigarettes. But everything else gone, and they never hit us at the end like that, for once. And just annoyed me, and I'm in the hot room and all that. And of course, I've missed my flight, and I'm like, oh no. So here we go, what's happening now? Because if I don't get on a flight, I'm doing the rest of the sentence and all that, and probably more, you know what I mean? Because that, you know, they don't care. You explain to the judge, no. They're like, they held me up at the airport. Did you get on the plane? No, well, it was your fault. And anyway, somebody's come in, and the next thing I know, I'm getting frog marched across the tarmac, you know, and there's like, first time for a long while I've had the whole shebang on me, one on either side, went up the staircase. We've had to go sideways. Have you ever been on the plane? People will know I'm genuine that I've done this, because you would not know this, because you think you can walk up three abreast, you don't. It's very awkward. You're having to take, it's like a coordinated conga dance going up. Get up there, and then we've had to pirouette so we can sit down, all three of us at the same time on the front row, you know. And they're undoing the things and that. And one of the guards is like telling the pilot, no, my Spanish, I'm better speaking than most Spaniards at that point. He's telling the pilot, no, don't let him off the plane. Why would you drop me off in Manchester on the way back? You know what I mean? Can I just get off here? I'm going home. Why would I? And they've done that. And everybody in the plane is like, what the hell's going on here? And the little old air hostess, she's so nice and that. And she's, oh, would you like, you know, a drink and a coffee and that? So absolutely murder a coffee. It's just been, you know, I can imagine it's been one of these days, but you know, he took everything. And it's the happiest moment in life. She turned around, but this is British Airways or whatever, you know, everything's free, you're in first class. And I'm like, thanks, big man. I'll have a laugh, Jack, and just keep them coming. And so I've arrived in Glasgow, obviously I'm first off the plane, I'm the whole front row to me. And all I've got is this beat up guitar and a couple of songbooks and I'm like that, going through it. And I'd swore to my mum, do not come to the airport to meet me, because I will be here for days. I've got no passport, I've got no nothing. I'm coming back to Glasgow airport. I'm getting deported, extradited on a narco trafficking charge. So there's going to be a wee while waiting. Don't you come up. And I'm walking off the plane and I'm getting to the bit. I've got no passport. I've got a thing saying, you know, beat it. It's a rent fee. It's a train ticket and I'm arriving on the plane. You know, I showed you. And it's like, ah, it's all right. And I'm like, double take. You know, really? No, I'm thinking, you know, hey, now's going to take me in the cell, grill me. Where have you been for 6 years? Flashing lights. And well, there you go. And I'm like, and the door's parked. And I'm thinking, well, now's where the baggage normally goes. So they'll be here. And the door's opened, and it's my six-month-old nephew, my sister and my mum and dad, and I'm like that. They've just literally not stopped me, and I've just walked straight through. And the crazy thing was, my flight has actually arrived earlier than the flight I should have been on, even though it left an hour later, which is an advert for British Airways, I believe, because I think the cheap flights, they take the long route, but the scheduled airlines, you know, go straight there, or they get better landing spaces. Because actually, arriving, my mum and dad were none the wiser. But they thought I'd come off the same flight. And that sort of led to, like, more experiences, you know. I was, like, you are doting dad, even though it was my nephew. And then we've had several other crazy experiences through the times, but maybe that's better for
another pass.
Cliffhanger. Yeah.
Cliffhanger. What would you like to say to the viewers in conclusion then, who are watching this, and about, you know, where they can find your stuff and support
well,
you?
Well, you've had all, there's plenty more, by the way. That's only some of the stuff. There's loads more. If you look at the website, you'll see lots of other stuff that's not there, because obviously you're trying to get everything out in a period of time, you probably forget some of the best stuff. But as well as being a criminal, the music was actually not bad. So please, if you're into music, have a listen to the music and see what you think, because, you know, we didn't give a chance 30 years ago. Feel sorry for us and have a listen this time. You know, you might like it, might be surprised. But Sean, thanks for inviting us in. Hopefully we'll get an invite back to get the second part out.
Yeah, thanks for coming down. And Let us know what you thought in the comments and go down into the description box and check out Alan's website. Also, there's a YouTube link and you can see the music and everything else. So thank you, folks, and thank you, Alan. Yeah, give us a hug, man.
Yeah.
Nice one.
Yeah, mate, nailed it. Brilliant.
If you're looking for a gift, my new book, Sit Downs with Gangsters, is available worldwide on Amazon. We've interviewed over 1,000 people now, and we selected 10 of the hardest-hitting stories to go in this book. Each chapter features the story of one of our podcast guests. Those stories are Shane Taylor, Knife Maniac's Redemption, John Elite, Mafia Hitman for the Gambino crime family, Joey Barnett, 35 years in UK prison, Ian Blink MacDonald, £6 million bank robber, Chet Sandu, Asian smuggler in Spanish Supermax, John Lawson, the hit team commander, David Macmillan, international smuggler's Thai death row prison escape, John Abbott, San Quentin prison shootout and escape, Michael Francis, Colombo crime family capo portrayed in Goodfellas, and Wildman, English enforcer in Arizona prison. Link in description box on YouTube, available worldwide on Amazon. Also, my next book, Untouchable Jimmy Savile, is getting published in December 2023. So check that out as well. It will be available worldwide on Amazon. Thank you for listening. Cheers.
Legends, the greatest social casino experience has arrived at Legends.com. With thousands of the best free-to-play casino-style games, chances to earn millions of bonus coins and win real money. Legends is revolutionizing the Vegas experience wherever you are. If you love winning, then you'll love playing at Legends.com. Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Visit Legends.com for more information. Legends with a Z.com is legendary fun.
Power up fall projects with Ego at Lowe's. Every tool delivers power beyond belief. So whether it's leaves, limbs, or lawn cleanup, count on Ego to deliver the power, performance, and innovation you need. And now for a limited time, save up to $60 on select blowers, chainsaws, and pole saws. Shop Ego today at Lowe's. Offers valid through 10-1 while supplies last. Selection varies by location.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.